It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, an all-in-studio panel. Nathan Olivares-Giles, Rob Reed, and yes, Georgia Dow, all in studio. We're going to talk about a Supreme Court decision that could change the way you buy printer cartridges. Apple's ransom, it's the Turkish crime family, at it again. And the future of electric vehicles. Plus, we'll look for a name for Android. Oh, it's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 607, recorded Sunday, March 26th, 2017. Ozark Pudding. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TWiT. And by Betterment, a smart, easy-to-use, and less expensive way to invest for your financial future. Get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more at Betterment.com/TWiT. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at QuickenLoans.com/TWiT2. And by Audible. Sign up for the Gold Plus One plan to get two free books and a 30-day free trial at audible.com/twit2. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news, and we're all here today, which is nice. Our newest employee, Nathan Olivares-Giles, is here. It's great to have you, Nate OG.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Nice to be a official member of the TWiT family.
We first met you doing TWiT, right?
Yeah.
Who dragged you in here? Was it Mark Million?
Mark Million from Bloomberg dragged me in, and I guess I was working at Wired at the time. Yeah.
You've been through a few jobs, but that's okay. I'm not going to hold it against you. I just hope you stay here longer than you stayed at Wired.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes.
Nate is of course, going to be on a lot of the shows. You're going to be regular on the new Screensavers.
Yeah, but twice a month.
You'll also, I think you're working on some shows that you would like to do here.
Yep.
I want you to do a gaming show because you're a serious gamer.
Consider it done.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
And I thought if we did a gaming show, we should really do a Let's Play-ish kind of show where we play the games. Because what we did a gaming show for a while and was talking about the games. That's not as interesting.
I think people would love to see how bad I am at video games.
Great.
So I'm totally okay with that.
Especially
totally
the scary ones. That's always fun to watch other people.
Oh, yeah. Resident Evil or something.
Whose voice? Yeah, this voice sounds so familiar. Oh, it's Georgia Dow. Hi, Georgia Dow.
Hi.
Visiting us from Montreal.
Yes. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you in studio. Georgia was on the new Screensavers yesterday and rave reviews. They said, please hire her. She should be on the show. But I don't think we can get you to move from Canada, probably.
Though so I love it's beautiful here.
Anytime you come down. Yeah, we're getting some good weather. Well, no, it's raining. You like that, though. And you did wine cut. Did you do anything?
I don't really do wine.
You kind of came to the wrong place.
We
do have beer. Do you do beer?
No. Not really.
She's good at sleep, though. She has a number of videos at anxiety-videos.com, including, I love this, sleep like a baby. That's nice. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Just totally passed out. Like
I know. That's baby sleep well.
Good sleep. That's the drool sleep.
If I could sleep like that, I would.
If you could sleep in that position, you could sleep in any position.
That's true.
And that is Rob Reed. Great to have you, Rob Reed.
It is great to be here.
ReadRobReed.com. I like that. Is that the new site, Read Rob Reed?
It's a site. It is a site, yeah.
I love that.
And I think I have every derivative of the word read in both positions all pointing there.
So it's read
R-E-A-D, Rob R-E-I-D.
Oh, I get it. Read Rob Reed.
It's a command or a request.
Now, that we've had you on before on this show and also on Triangulation to talk about Year Zero.
Yes.
Rob did a great, I hope you've seen it. If you haven't, go see it, TED Talk on copyright math.
Yes, I did.
And it was actually really probably one of the best explanations of why this whole complaint of the music industry that they're losing money to pirates is bogus. And then he followed it up with this book, which is Aliens. It turns out aliens have been using our music for a long time, and they owe us a horrendous amount of royalties.
Terrible copyright violation. So this is the tale based on a true story of a vast alien civilization that is so into American pop music that they accidentally commit the biggest copyright infringement since the dawn of time, thereby bankrupting the entire universe.
There's an episode of Rick and Morty, which is one of my favorite cartoons, that was based on this.
You're kidding.
I don't know if anybody has seen this.
Oh, you sue Rick and Morty now.
There's like a karaoke show, and they like have like
you
Earth music.
Kidding.
I swear to God.
Rob, you better investigate this.
So well, did they come before this book? This is a few years old, my book. So
this is just like last year.
They
I
stole
have to
your
see.
Idea.
They borrowed
I'll find the episode.
It would be ironic, wouldn't it?
I'm very open-sourcey guy.
Who's fighting copyright violation ends up suing for
now, the news about this, because I am here on Twit this week, Random House has agreed, at my urgent request, to put the digital version of this book on crazy discount. It is $1.99 all week because of this Twit appearance.
That's
literally
nice.
Because of this. I said I'm going to be on Twit.
That's
and
awesome.
It'd be real. I mean, the book's been out for a few years.
Yeah. It's really funny. In fact, the first sentence is, aliens suck at music. And it's not for a lack of trying. So, and Rob has a little bit of experience in this, having founded Listen.com and Rhapsody.
Wow.
So you go back a little ways.
You're a reformed
entrepreneur, I take it.
I am a recovering entrepreneur turned science fiction author.
I like it.
Love it.
Yes.
I like it. And of course, Tech TV fans will know that Morgan Webb is your spouse.
She is.
Which is pretty cool.
It's very cool. It was incredibly cool. Yeah. It is the coolest fact about
Tell Morgan.
And the coolest aspect of my life.
A year from May, 1 year from now, is the 20th anniversary of the launch of ZDTV/TechTV.
A year? Wow.
20 years.
My goodness.
So I think we need to have a big party.
What day of May?
May 11th, 2018.
My goodness.
That's kind of scary.
And it was ZDTV at the time,
I remember. It was ZDTV. Yep. Was she there at the beginning?
No, because she would have still been in Berkeley at that point. But she came in, she probably started there 2000, 2001-ish.
Nice.
I'm going to guess. Yeah. And it was already Tech TV, when she came over. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was a week for tech news. There was a lot of it. I think we should probably mention, because we talked about it on Wednesday, that the Senate did indeed vote to revoke an FCC rule, a rule that had only been promulgated October of last year, that prevented internet service providers from selling your browser history to the highest bidder.
Well, without permission first. Let's make it clear.
Yeah, without permission.
Because this is something that every ISP is basically doing.
AT&T did create a deal where if you agreed to it, you would get a somewhat reduced price for your internet access.
Yeah.
But for the most part, until October of last year, they just did whatever they wanted with it, including putting, Verizon put those undeletable cookies. Whenever you surf with a Verizon phone, you identified yourself to the website. And then they would charge websites for that information. We'll tell you who Leo is. We'll tell you that.
Yeah.
They inject ads into your search results. They inject ads into your surfing. They've done all of these things. Yeah. They were really stymied and didn't like it one bit that the FCC stopped that. But this is back under Obama. Senate has now voted in a fairly close vote along party lines, exactly. 50-48, I think it was.
48-50.
Yeah.
Two extensions.
To say, that's it. You can do anything you want.
Yep.
And this is going to be the trend, I think, from the FCC and from Congress to just eliminate consumer protections and say, oh, competition will take care of it. I don't know if I agree with that. The House has to approve it, but it's because the House has an even greater majority of Republicans.
The House has to approve it, and then Trump would have to sign it into law.
Is it a bill? I think it's just a rule. I think it does not. It's not a law.
It's the rollback of a regulation.
Yeah, I don't think it's. It's
Congressional it's in a review act.
Right.
Okay. So
okay. Oh, it is.
Can review something that was done within 60 congressional days, and they can review it, and then
without presidential signature
window.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they can repeal that.
Sad. What's really sad to me is that our members of Congress are, frankly, and very clearly in the pockets of big companies and not in the pockets of consumers.
And I'll add that it's rather cool that a Canadian knows our laws better than we do.
Thank you for that.
Because the three of us had no idea.
She just knows everything better than
we do. Well, you know, I don't want to sound defeatist here. I feel like this should be one of those opportunities, if this is something you strongly believe in, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, like call up your congress member, call up your congressman, call up your congresswoman.
Yeah.
Tell them. I mean, that vote was close and it was along party lines, but as I think we just saw with the GOP giving up
on
Trump,
they can be persuaded. They can be persuaded. Yeah.
And
ultimately the vote, we're the boss.
Yeah.
And we have to assert that.
Exactly. And the fact of the matter is that ISPs, cable companies, TV set makers, basically any sort of internet connected device you have is collecting this sort of data.
Yeah.
This is a business for all of these companies. So whether or not you like that business existing is another separate issue. But I think whether or not there's transparency about it and whether or not they ask us permission first is what this is about, right?
Yeah.
So keeping that rule in place, I don't see how that negatively impacts this business, which is in existence and growing. If anything, it just keeps us in the loop about that, and I don't know how anyone could be mad at that. So,
yeah.
You know, hey, if you want them to roll us back, repeal it, tell your elected officials that too. Let them know that you think they're doing the right thing. But here's an opportunity to be active and engaged. So I'll get off my soapbox now.
I should point out though that
we should give up on it. You know?
This rule, this regulation, and by the way, I'm reading an article on BuzzFeed, which does say the president does have to sign it. It is a bill. Mm, it is okay. A law.
Yes, vindicated.
Well, and
I know
it won't make any difference.
Ish rules.
Yeah. But I should point out, this is prior to October 2016, this is was the state of the situation.
Right. Exactly.
This isn't like a change of suddenly ancient. Much worse yeah. than it's been for years.
Exactly.
This is back to the way it was 6 months ago.
Yeah.
It's just, it's unfortunate. I would hope that we would get some protection of our privacy. We are, you know, we talk a lot, and I hear from people a lot in our audience who are upset about Google spying on them or Facebook spying on them. But your internet service provider is prior to Google and Facebook. It knows much more about what you do online.
Yeah.
And by the way, this would allow them also to sell location information.
Yeah.
Because it's ISPs, not just landline-based, but also cell phone companies. So Verizon and T-Mobile and Sprint and AT&T, who know where you are.
It's everything.
Could sell your location information.
And I don't think that people really get that this would be, you know, what time you wake up at. Yeah. Where you were when you woke up, what websites you've surfed, what yeah. people you follow. It's almost,
who you're communicating with, like yeah, where that traffic
where you're
is
traveling
going back
to,
and forth.
How long it takes you to get somewhere. It's information about everything in your life.
Good, I've got a withing scale, how much I weigh.
Yes.
My ISP knows.
Well, I tweet
I
that, yes. so they, you know, that's available to all and sundry.
But it would be nice if you could make the choice to tweet that rather than
or
just
at least
giving
know.
That.
Yeah, I made
at
that
least,
choice.
Or at least know, because if you know, then know. You could choose to say, if you're in a place where there's a choice. Some people don't even have
exactly.
a choice, right?
Exactly.
They may only have one ISP provider that is in their area. But at least then, if you have a choice, then they'll say, like Alaska said, that they're not going to be using this information and selling it.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, okay, that sounds good. And that would at least give a little bit of competition where if, you know, Verizon says, well, we're
right.
not going to sell your data. It would just give us a little bit more power in that.
Our ISP, SonicNet, definitely does not sell that data. Mm. That's actually a very good point. You choose. So now your opportunity is to choose the right ISP.
Well, if you have the opportunity.
If you have the choice.
If you have a choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then,
as George said, if you have
as this will likely, I would guess, will turn out to be, is if you can afford that choice. Cause
that's a good point.
This is probably going to be a sort of situation where you're going to have those, you know, boutique.
Oh, you
ISPs.
Think they'll rebate you the money they make?
No,
from, no.
I think
3 months
pay extra to have that choice. I think you could pay
yeah.
extra.
Oh,
for
right.
The privacy
like when I wanted to be outside of the phone book from their publishing, I had to pay money so that I wouldn't be in the
I
phone
know.
Book.
Isn't that annoying?
I think
do
it's
they do that in Canada too.
They
so
did.
Annoying.
If they offered it at all,
how did it work before October? Because like, and I don't think we really were aware of this
yeah.
prior
EFF.
To this, right? Like, I don't know if this is a radical change. The other thing that I worry about with transparency, maybe I'm just a little too cynical about, you know, how companies go about things. But if transparency were imposed on them, I just imagine it being, you know, the 10,000th word in the EULA.
Yeah.
When you're clicking, you know, robotically through things,
right.
like that's
even
like
if
the
they
noti-
did have to ask for permission.
Yeah, that's the notification that we would have gotten.
Yeah.
Well,
you know?
Here's an article from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Jeremy Galula wrote the five things, and this is the subset of the total things, the five creepy things your ISP could do. And the reason these are credible, because they've done them all.
Mm, yeah.
Sell your data to marketers, hijack your searches, snoop through your traffic. Do you remember the Nebu ad and the form controversy? This was software. We talked a lot about this on Security Now that ISPs were using, including here's an article about British Telecom using it, to insert ads into your surfing.
Yeah.
So they get marketing information about you, like Facebook does. And instead of it being on Facebook, it's everywhere you go. Pre-installing software on your phone to record URLs you visit. AT&T and Sprint and T-Mobile did that.
Good Lord.
And injecting undetectable, undeletable tracking cookies. That's what Verizon.
I mean, to a certain extent, this is a sort of situation where technology is moving faster than the laws have been able to keep up. And that's I think that's what
we
makes
see
this,
that all the time now.
Yeah, and that's what makes this kind of discouraging is finally, just in October, they got their act together and they said you got to ask permission first.
We were so close.
And then they're
pulling it back. Yeah. They often say they just do it because they can, not ask if they should.
Yeah.
And then how should that be enacted to that?
Yeah.
I think that one, if anyone that's in the House had this happen to them with all of their information kind of given back to them, I think that would be the first time that they're like, oh my goodness, how nefarious this could be, how this could be used to sway votes.
You're not suggesting that or anything.
No, never. No, please, no. That would be wrong. But it's that thing is that sometimes
wrong,
people
but effective.
Don't.
Anybody got the number for the Turkish crime family? We could call them and ask them.
By the way, to put a pin in an upcoming story, undeletable traffic cookie, I forecast that will be Android's dessert for the letter U.
Very good. We were talking before the show, and I guess we'll do it again, about what Android O could be named, what dessert, and they're really a limited number. But Rob has a pick that I think is, I got to say, I think that's going to be the wild card pick. I don't know if that's going to be the first choice.
I'm hoping for, should we talk about it now?
Let's save that. That's a tease. We'll also talk about the Turkish crime family. That's a tease. And I am mad as heck, and apparently somebody else is, because my rundown's been defaced with the words, why? What the hell is wrong with you, Google? Google's taken, was that you, Carson? Google's, Carson admits it, Google's dropping SMS support from Hangouts. Yeah. Why? We'll talk about that in just a bit. Our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. I got a box waiting for me. I think we're going to go out to dinner after the show. Yeah. But tomorrow I'll have a box waiting for me. With a Blue Apron meal ready to go. I love Blue Apron. We get the box. You get to choose, by the way. It's not a subscription. You choose what weeks you get it. In each refrigerated box, Blue Apron will send you three different meals that you can make yourself, including the recipe card and every ingredient. So, you know, even if, and it's not more than you need. Like if it needs 2 teaspoons of soy sauce, you get a little bottle with 2 teaspoons of soy sauce, which I love. Everything you need, ingredients you've never tried before, and a meal that will blow your mind. They have plans for couples. And they have plans for families with more kid-friendly ingredients. You pick the day you get the box. It's not automatic. You pick the meals that you want in the box, and you're going to save money. Blue Apron is less expensive than shopping at the grocery store, and it's better food. It's always fresh. It's from local farms. The meat is fresh. The fish is fresh from sustainable fisheries. The beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals. The farms they use regenerative farming practices. They're really trying to build a more sustainable food system. So you have the good feeling of knowing that you're getting amazing fresh food without the middleman, which saves you money. A grocery store is going to be 60% more expensive than Blue Apron. They delivered it. I'm sorry, to Hawaii and Alaska. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental United States. I'm sorry. There's no weekly commitment. You customize it based on your dietary preferences. And there's, you know what, they're pointing out that they save food, too, because there's no waste. If you need 2 scallions, 2 carrots, whatever, they're going to send you what you need. The only thing, I said it wrong once, if you need a clove of garlic, they do send you the whole head. That's okay.
We can use this garlic.
I can always find a use for garlic. I guess they don't want to peel the one clove off of a garlic to send that along. What's on the menu this week? How about salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli? Pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple. I have learned 12 ways to cook bok choy. I didn't ever like bok choy until I got my Blue Apron box, and now I am a bok choy master.
Ooh.
And it's good for you.
Yes,
it's really
true.
Good vegetable. Vegetable chili and sweet baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips, spicy shrimp, coconut curry with cabbage and rice. Just look what's on the menu and order your first box. You're going to get your first 3 meals free with your first purchase and free shipping if you go to blueapron.com/twit. Yeah, the meal's on us. Blue Apron. Ooh, short rib burgers on pretzel buns. When's that going to be in my... I think that's a... They don't repeat more than once a year, so that's the unfortunate thing. But once you've cooked it, you know how, so you can go and make it again. And your kids will say, Mommy, I want that short rib burgers and pretzel buns thing again. And you'll have to say, Honey, it's
next
not
year.
Till next year. BlueApron.com/twit. Actually, I having cooked now with Blue Apron, I do make the recipes again because you have the recipe card. Now you know how the ingredients work.
Oh, that's
and you've
so
done it.
Cool.
So it's really expanded my repertoire. So they call themselves the Turkish crime family. Almost certainly not Turkish. Definitely not a family, but they are criminals. They claim they have 250,000 iCloud accounts, passwords,
billion, right?
And login. 250 million. Quarter billion.
Quarter billion. Yeah,
I got it wrong. Quarter wow. billion. Damn. iCloud accounts. And they're apparently blackmailing Apple. They say if you don't pay the ransom by April 7th, we will reset the passwords on those accounts and remotely wipe iPhones. What? But what do they want, Georgia?
They want that's the best part. Is it's like $75,000 in Bitcoin or $100,000 in iTunes cards, gift cards. So you see
which
anyone
for Apple
selling,
is a good deal,
right? If you go on the streets and you're like,
iTunes card,
don't
iTunes
buy
card,
them.
Go to
don't
Bucharest, iTunes card. I got 75,000 iTunes card. How much you want?
It's kind of like Dr. Evil, isn't it? It's like, I've got 250,000 accounts. What do we want? $75,000.
Yeah, they're not even valuing
them
that high.
Do more. And then they're like, okay.
$100,000.
Yeah. iTunes.
It's ridiculous.
And I wonder if they would just sell them all the little cards, or would you have one card that was like $100,000?
I think they just have a lot of friends, and they want to just gift people with songs. And
Right? They're friendly. This is a friendly group of people.
It's a family. It's for life.
They're going to wipe all of your accounts. And then you get to replenish them with all of these cards that they give you later.
The Turkish crime family apparently is very available to the media. There's a quote from Motherboard. I'm going to add the accent. I don't know really where they're from. I just want my money. And I thought this would be interesting report that a lot of Apple customers would be interested in reading and hearing.
Is that what Turkish people sound like? Yeah,
no, they're not from Turkey. That's just
a
ruse.
That's a Slavic. That's a generic Slavic.
So they wrote to, generic Slavic accent.
Yes.
Are you willing to share a sample of the data set? An unnamed member of Apple's security team wrote to the hackers a week ago. The hackers did, in fact, give a subset of the data, 54 passwords, to ZDNet. Mm-hmm. ZDNet took the trouble of verifying that they were, in fact, passwords to iCloud accounts. They weren't just random data. And then they attempted to contact the account holders. They were able to get a hold of 10 of them. So at least 10 were real in this set of 54. They talked to the various peoples. Most of these were old passwords, and like 3 or 4 years old. 10 people said they were accurate and have changed them. The 10 people we spoke to, says ZDNet, were based in the UK and had UK cell phone numbers. But the Turkish hacker collector says, well, we just have... data in groups. It's bundles. So we give you a UK bundle, but it's all over the world. They also, all 10, confirmed they had used the same password since opening their iCloud account. So we don't know how old they are. Most of them 4 or 5 years old. However, this is the weird one. One of the people, what the presumption is at this point is that Apple wasn't breached. Somebody else was breached,
right?
Mm-hmm. And people got passwords that had been reused on iCloud, and then the Turkish hacker group family,
like reverse engineered it.
Probably did some sort of automated system of saying, "Is this an iCloud password?"
Uh-huh.
One of the people, though, that they confirmed that they talked to, actually 3 people said their iCloud email address and password were unique to iCloud and had not been used on any other site, which would kind of indicate that maybe iCloud was breached.
Though they said that they didn't say that they breached Apple.
They explicitly said they did
they,
not,
they
right?
said that they didn't, yeah. And they our memories way. Are so faulty. Like, if you asked me how many things I've signed up with,
right.
I have no clue. I have absolutely no clue. I can barely remember. Use one password, put on two-factor authentication.
Well, I
don't protect you.
I don't want to oversimplify this, but exactly. Like, it seems as though the way to protect yourself, if you're worried about this, is to change your password.
Mm-hmm.
To something unique
that
you're hopefully not using on another service,
Or use 1Password to remember that.
Or, password manager like 1Password, LastPass. Yeah. And then turn on 2-factor authentication. Because even if they have the password and if they use it, if they have 2-factor, they're not going to get that unique
so
code
do that.
Sent to your device.
And if you don't have 2-factor,
so
turn
if you
on,
just
turn
do
it
those
on.
Those things, like, we're all going to be okay here. And, this is the sort of advice that I think all of us give out to our friends and family all the time.
Right. Yeah.
And so it should be a fairly easy fix. And I don't think Apple's going to send an email telling everybody to change their passwords or anything. But if you're watching the show and if you're worried about it, like, that's what you should do. And you can protect yourself fairly easily. Is that an oversimplification of things? Or?
No, I think you should still change the password, but turn on two-factor everywhere you can.
Does the article indicate how much ZDNet was able to raise in their own ransom from these 10 people?
I got 5 iTunes cards I'd be glad to give you.
They actually mocked this group. They said, based on our experience and our interactions with the group and its members, it's evident the group is naive and inexperienced. Oh, man. You don't say that to hackers.
It really feels like a troll, though.
It's almost a troll. Based on its grandiose claims and its cherry-picking of media outlets, because they called media outlets.
Yeah.
They also said, when we began asking the group questions, the conversation quickly turned to whether CBS News, which owns ZDNet, would cover this too.
Yeah.
Can you get us on CBS News? I really like that Scott Pelley. He's a great guy.
The group also appears, according to ZDNet, disorganized and unable to maintain order with its own ranks, seen by the apparent firing of one of its members who ran the Twitter account.
It's like waving a red cape at a bull right now. Did the author of this article sign their name? I don't want to out them or anything.
Yes,
they
did.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to say. It can't seem to stand message as evidenced by the need to correct the record after reporters, quote, misunderstood the situation. A breach means this is a paste bin, quote, from the group, the hacker. What is it, the Turkish?
Turkish crime family.
Crime family. It's like Tony Soprano.
TCF.
Hey, a breach means nothing in 2017 when you can just pull the exact same user information in smaller scales through companies that aren't as secure.
Ah, that's what they're kind of saying. Mm-hmm. Maybe they, you know what they might have gotten is a password vaults, right?
Yeah.
It would identify it as iCloud information.
Possible.
ZDNet says, we can't be sure this is something big, but based on our reporting, we can't say that it's nothing. So that's why we're taking it seriously.
So it's either massive or
nothing.
Meh.
I'm going to vote for meh. I'm going to vote for meh, but it's always a good idea to turn on two-factor, change your password. Nothing wrong with that.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's a good template for future.
Yeah.
Because that is a real threat. Because if you have somebody's iCloud account, you can wipe their Mac, you can wipe their iPhone.
Yeah.
You could be a bad, bad person.
Yeah, Matt Honan notoriously went through that when he was at Wired a few years ago.
Yeah.
And he lost, like a lot of... pictures of his children and just like a
horrible.
Ton of
they can wipe your Mac
they did in fact wipe his
this
Mac,
was specifically
right?
because he did not have two-factor turned on and he was using his the same password for iCloud and Gmail if I remember correctly.
It was a sophisticated hack because they used
shame.
Amazon Apple so they got the last 4 digits of the credit card number by a social engineering hack, I think, with Apple.
Oh, yeah, and,
and then they went
up.
To Amazon. They said, we're changing the credit card. It was a complicated multi-stage.
Like a backdoor thing through Amazon. I remember this.
Yeah,
now.
It was total reverse social engineering.
Yeah.
Right.
Poor Matt.
It was clever.
And the irony is, this group that was doing it to Matt had only one goal. They wanted his Twitter account because he had a 3-letter Twitter handle.
Yeah.
And
really?
MAT is a valuable Twitter handle. It turns out, I don't know if this is still true, but in those days... 3 years ago.
People would pay for that stuff.
Kids wanted clever handles, right? There was a whole thing to get clever 3-letter handles.
Yeah.
So I worry for Alex Wilhelm's future.
What's his?
Just Alex.
Alex.
Right? Yeah.
That's a
nice
good one.
That's a nice one.
I'm glad I didn't do at Leo. I could have. I joined early enough. There were no other Leos, but I went for my full name, and I'm grateful at this point. iCloud may have doxed, speaking of iCloud, a journalist Twitter attacker. This is an interesting slant. On the story we already reported on Kurt Eichenwald, who, remember, is the reporter for Vanity Fair, who apparently upset a troll. The troll, Kurt's epileptic. The troll sent him an epigenetic
basically GIF. An animated GIF that looked like a strobe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Hoping to send him into a seizure.
Yeah.
And we found out how this happened, and that's kind of why The Verge is saying... iCloud may have doxed a journalist's Twitter attacker because this was the steps that the police used. First, they sent a court order to Twitter saying, we know this account.
Mm-hmm.
So Twitter, it was at @Jew_Goldstein, which give you some idea of the kind of person this is. Twitter said, all right, yeah, we'll give you all the data. But the data showed only a dummy email address along with an IP address and phone numbers for a prepaid track phone, which is normally anonymous, but the guy foolishly, I shouldn't
logged into
say
his
this,
iCloud
he put it
account.
In his iPhone 6.
Yeah.
And so then they said, well, what, let's go to Apple and find out what iCloud accounts are associated with his phone number. And Apple said, oh, yeah, we know who this is. And that's how they got the guy.
Yeah.
And so, allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
But it is important to understand that, you know, this is an example of there's information about you out there all over the place.
Yeah. And then they use that information from iCloud to be able to read his messaging and his searches where he searched for
all
how to induce an epileptic seizure in someone and, you know, messages of actually saying, I'd like to, you know, have him have a seizure.
Oh, he was sending DMs to people saying, I sent him,
Yeah, bragging about
it. Yeah, I hope he dies.
And he really hurt the guy. I mean, it said, I was doing a little bit of research while coming up here, and apparently the guy had trouble speaking for weeks afterward.
That's terrible.
I mean, he really, really genuinely damaged the guy pretty badly. I mean, it was as bad as an assault.
Really, it's almost, it's like going through like an electroshock kind of your brain.
He assaulted this guy.
That is an assault.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, I think, what is the most fascinating aspect about this to me is it's one of the first situations that I can think of where we're seeing trolling on the internet that has a real implication in the real world, and then there's the evidence to tie it. Because so often we hear that these trolls online have real-world impacts, right?
Yeah.
And now here's the evidence to see it. And this wasn't something this man could avoid. He was just scrolling through his at mentions. He didn't even have to go into
it. It wasn't even the first time it had happened. He had been attacked a couple other times.
Yeah.
One time,
really?
And I think he dropped his iPad.
Yeah.
He dropped his iPad before he saw, he kind of knew what was, and he dropped his iPad.
Yeah.
Wasn't there some crazy thing that happened with a Japanese TV show several years ago? What was it?
Yeah.
It was a Pokemon show, where a whole bunch of Japanese kids were put into some kind trance or a seizure.
Could you get them to go to their father's wallet, pull money out, and mail it? Because I would be interested in that technique.
There are certain video games, if you play them before you play them, there's a warning about
it. Probably because of that, right?
Exactly.
But that was without intent, right?
Yeah, that was entirely without intent. Yeah, it was entirely without intent.
Pikachu wasn't going after anybody the way this guy was.
Pikachu's innocent.
Ish.
Oh, they're going to be coming after you on Twitter now.
Oh, man.
Just letting you know.
By the way, the fellow was arrested and has been charged with cyber stalking, and we'll see what happens. We'll follow that story because that is terrible. And this is why we can't have nice things. This is why we can't have nice things segment of the show. I think we got it all. We got the Apple section. Unless you want to talk about augmented reality. We talk about this every week. I'm tired of it. Although there's now more and more evidence that Scoble may get a dinner in Paris on me.
I know. I remember
that. Bastard. Scoble says there's going to be a clear iPhone at the end of the year. That is not going to happen.
June. He stated June. So.
Oh, really? I'm off the hook.
I think you're okay.
And I said, if that happens,
I don't think it's going to happen in June or this year.
I will buy you dinner
at the restaurant of your choice. So he chose a restaurant in Paris, Joël Robuchon.
He's good taste. That's good.
He has
taste,
good
though.
Taste, but geez Louise. I'm praying that Apple doesn't. It's funny now. I'm praying Apple doesn't do anything interesting.
That's why you don't want to talk about it. It brings up some a little bit of post traumatic.
I mean, in my mind, there's no at all dispute that Apple's working on this. Tim Cook said it many times. They've probably spent billions on it. They've hired a lot of people. The real question in my mind is, does Apple still have the mojo that the company had when it changed the world with the iMac and the iPod, the iPhone, arguably the iPad, maybe the Apple. No, not the Apple Watch.
No.
Been a slow decline, right? The iPad and the Apple Watch have not changed the world. But Apple used to. Maybe it was only when Steve was there. Apple had that magic where they could take a product that everybody knew about, the MP3 players were not new, and do something magic that made it amazing.
And that's, there are countless tragedies associated with Steve's untimely death, but this is one of them. I mean, and it's like when he passed away, I think there was widespread, you know, hope that there was probably 3 or 4 years of awesome in the pipeline.
And we haven't
seen a thing. And I remember Walter Isaacson's book, which came out right around the time that he passed away. It's been over 5 years now. He said that he had fixed television. He didn't say exactly what
we've
it is.
Licked but it, as he said.
Yes, yeah. We've got that one.
The book's right there. I could go get it.
You know, if over 5 years after Steve passed away, I agree with you, there's been nothing other than size and case color changes, you know, bigger and smaller iPads and bigger and smaller iPhones and red ones and green ones. And
I mean, I know that Tim Cook and I know that Johnny Ive and I know everybody at Apple knows this. And I think that there's a lot of pressure and they want really badly to do the next big thing. Mm-hmm. But the question is, can you throw money at something like that? Can you just hire people and make it happen?
And what would be the timing to that, right? Like, should, like, and they, Tim Cook kind of said, I'm going to go through and it's probably going to be something more software related than hardware related. Yeah. So it seems like they're going to first try to do something with the phones that we already have upgraded to a certain capacity. Yeah, I know. It sparkles. I know. Here we go. Here we go. Go ahead.
Let me
show
see your case.
Sparkles.
It doesn't just sparkle. It flows.
It's just fun. Come on. Yeah.
That's a nice iPhone case. Wow. It's a little girly. It's got little pink hearts in it.
It's just a little girly.
Yeah. Like a 12-year-old girl.
I know. That's about where I stay, is about a 12-year-old girl.
Did you buy this at 21 Forever?
I actually looked it up. I was searching for a water case with sparkles.
Actually, I'm really loving this.
I just kept on.
I'm buying one.
Are you buying one?
That's it. I'm getting one.
You can get one with like black sparkles, right?
Yeah,
it doesn't,
manly sparkles.
Manly sparkles.
Little
and
penises
skulls.
Floating around. Yeah. No? Okay. What were you saying?
Man,
I'm sorry. I do this to Georgia every time. I'm so sorry. I'm just jealous because of your manly sparkles.
Right.
AR. Manly sparkles?
AR. Oh,
AR.
The AR.
It's probably can they spend the money and make it happen?
Can they? They could definitely spend the money.
My fear is they're going to make a Pokemon Go, basically, right? Some sort of thing where you look through the phone. We've had AR browsers for at least 3 years. But that's not
really, like, Pokemon Go is not really AR. That's like an image supplanted on top of a background.
Right.
AR
would be... Your camera is taking a picture of the street and the little Pokemon's on it.
No, it would be like you see the lamps and you go to another language and you see all of it in different language
and
you see your
engine,
friend and you're like, contact
engine,
name.
You get the explode diagram.
Would be actually more of something that would be software related in AR.
And when
does that get you
excited?
A little.
Well, you got sparkles, so.
So they're saying that the AR advance is a software-related rather than hardware.
That's what he said, yeah. That right now. Like,
yeah,
he
yeah.
didn't say that not in
well,
the
they,
future,
you
but...
know, Scobles insists that they're doing a deal with Zeiss, and that Zeiss is making glasses for them. And that's
kind
of the form factor.
It kind of has
contact
to be glasses,
lenses
yeah.
or glasses,
if
right?
If it's going to be good...
Because nobody wants to walk around
with a HoloLens on their...
Yeah, or just holding
their
phone.
Or, just or like
or,
this.
Yeah.
This is not good.
Yeah. No, that's not a great... Well, it is with the sparkles.
Oh, thank... That's
it
true.
Really kind of is a good look with the good sparkles. Look. Yeah, that's really cool.
Can you see Morgan, like, rocking the sparkles?
Totally, yeah.
I love Morgan.
Well,
Morgan.
I think to a certain extent, I think we all kind of need to calm down a little bit here. Because really, most companies have, like, one... Like zero groundbreaking products, like, you know, history making products. Apple has been pretty fortunate in that they had, you know, their original, you know, Macs. Then you had the iMac. Then you had the iPod, which, by the way, doesn't really exist anymore outside of an iPod Touch, which is essentially an iPhone. Then you had the iPhone. So I guess in some ways we've been kind of spoiled by recent.
Oh, they've
recent
had a
string
crazy.
Of hits,
they have a run that no other company can possibly match.
So just being realistic, that's not sustainable. And if you look at all of those things, whether it's the original Mac, whether it's the iMac, whether it's the iPod or the iPhone.
They all happened under one person's watch.
Well, they all happened under one person's watch, but they also were things that existed that Apple took and modified, right?
Yes.
And let's be real. AR right now sucks.
Yeah.
Virtual reality
it's not in the place.
Fun, but not great, right? These are early adopter things. So if you want to go by Apple's history, then Microsoft has to make like a competent HoloLens. And then Apple will find the consumer angle that fits like our culture and lifestyle, right?
They were agenda shattering, I'd say, with the iPad. I don't think there was much. I mean, I guess there were some tablet-y
the
things
iPad
before
was pretty
that.
Big.
There were some tablet-y
things. It might
things
not have like
you know what happened? The
holds.
iPad is a big iPhone for all
that's
intents
what
and
happened.
Purposes, and they built the iPad before
that
the iPhone,
is a
right?
Giant iPhone.
So
that's what happened, which is that these got big enough that people didn't need the iPad, and so I think that's why iPad sales and tablet sales in general.
Well, part of it is people hold on to iPads for a really long time.
Yeah,
like Apple makes good stuff. You can
I
hold
think
on
what
iPad
happened it
like
was an intermediate
years.
Product. It was between your phone and your laptop, or phone and desktop.
Well, that's part of it,
and that as the phones got bigger and more capable, people didn't I mean, nobody wants to buy an extra $500 intermediate product. Yeah, yeah. I've got a phone. I got a laptop. What do I need an iPad for? Yeah. So I don't. I would be very surprised if they come back. If your theory is correct, that people just, you know, they've got it. At some point, they're going to get a new one, right? And so sales will come back. But I don't think that's going
to
happen.
What would happen, though, if schools started to really take in for iPads as they become more affordable and things with Swift Playgrounds and then really cut them down?
And I think Chromebooks completely stole all that initiative.
Because they were much more affordable, for sure.
Because they're a lot cheaper.
Easier to maintain, cheaper.
But where are laptops going?
Keyboard.
But where are laptops going? They're going touchscreen.
Two in one.
They're going to convertibles, right?
Yeah. No,
so,
I agree.
So all stuff is converging. So I think there's still hope for an iPad-like product for Apple to dominate on. And iPad sales are still way, way, way bigger than Mac sales, you know, even with their decline, right?
And Apple, by the way, we will talk about what Apple announced this week. Unfortunately, it wasn't new Macs.
No. Or even really that exciting new iPads.
No, it was just a red iPhone and new bands and...
Yeah.
A tablet that really was the cheap iPad, the one you get if you can't, you know, you want school. This is one for schools, right?
Yeah.
It's a replacement for the iPad Air 2, and it's the $399.
What I wanted was a pro version of the mini. I don't know if anybody else really wants
With a
that.
Stylus.
So the rumor is we're going to sell.
Yeah.
We do need, I think there will be a new mini.
I want that.
And I think there will be a new iPad Pro. And the rumor is there will be, among other new iPad Pros, one that is the same size as the 9.7-inch iPad, but with a 10.5-inch screen. They're going to reduce the bezel. That's the one you want. Because I think, have you ever tried the 12.9-inch iPad?
That's what I have. I love
it. It's so big.
Yeah, but see, I like to draw, so I love all the extra space.
Then you should get this.
Estate.
This is big.
It can also double, essentially. You get the keyboard with the Pro, and it essentially
like
it starts replacing your laptop for like
but
flight.
Here's my big problem. It doesn't have windowing. It has like little panes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you don't have windowing, are you really a computer? Can you really use it?
I don't. I have like lots of iPads, and they just kind of lie in an iPad graveyard.
They're cool.
And I use my Air.
Use your phone.
Or I use my Mac. And then I use my phone. And really, I almost never will use my iPad because of that. Like, if there was pencil support, maybe.
Yeah.
But
your
then it
case,
also sticks in a strange
I
way.
Figured out is made by a company called Okasus, O-K-A-S-U-S. And here's the one I'm going to get. It has a built-in diamond ring.
Ooh.
That one's,
now that,
that
is
one's
very
for
manly.
Lisa.
That, they have all kinds here. And all of them have the liquid backs that... oh, how about a little fairy?
I like that one.
See, this has the little hearts.
I like the
That's
one
the cherry least. Blossom festival.
That would actually be really nice.
Yeah,
that
the
is actually
are falling.
Pretty.
See?
See, I thought that some of them didn't have the liquid for the back for some of them. So.
I don't think the one with the ring does.
This kind of reminds me that... I'm probably going to be real nerdy here for a second, but the Nexus 4 had that kind of holographic, like, sparkly back.
Yeah.
And I'm all in.
I like that.
You know,
actually,
there's precedent.
We're going to have, and I'm not going to be here because I'm going on a little mini vacation, but Wednesday we're going to be streaming the Samsung event live.
Yes.
And I think I don't know, but I think from the rumors I've seen, the Samsung Galaxy S8 will be a really interesting phone. And you know, you could argue there's nothing new that you could do on a phone, but I think that there's some things. This is going to be a beautiful phone. With some new features, including, I think, some of the features Apple's expected to announce later in the year.
Like getting rid of the home button and that kind of stuff.
Getting rid of the home button, having a maybe a fingerprint reader underneath the screen. I don't know. Or maybe on the on-off switch. I'm going to be watching with interest to see what Samsung does on Wednesday. We'll have a live stream of that. What time is that, Carson? Is it 9 or 10?
8 a.m.
8 a.m.?
11 a.m.
11 a.m.
I don't think Samsung will do it, but I really hope they spend some time talking about their revamped battery safety procedures.
They already did a presser, remember?
Yeah.
And they have a six-step program. In fact, they've been telling other phone companies should do this. They're going to x-ray the batteries.
I don't know if they're the ones that should be telling other companies how to do this.
Definitely not.
Well, you know what? That might be a differentiator for them. You know,
we've already been through it.
Our batteries blew up, so now we're going to really do it right.
They've learned 20 different ways how not to make batteries.
I'd still like to see them talk more about that because that...
I am sure they will. They have to.
Were really like, well, there were some manufacturing errors and it really wasn't our fault.
Mistakes
No, they have to.
Pay attention more now.
I think if they don't reassure consumers, this is... Because I gave my daughter my old S7.
Yeah.
And her friend said, oh, you got the blow-up phone.
Yeah.
And I had to explain to her, no. But the problem is every Samsung now is perceived as the phone that blows up. They've got to really, they're going to have to bend over backwards to reassure people that the S8 will not blow up.
The wonderful thing is that people don't steal them now.
Yeah, that's right. There's no market.
I'm going to leave that phone there.
Samsung also will have a new voice assistant called Bixby. What do you guys think of Bixby?
Makes me think of the Hulk.
Do you know anything about Bixby? No? We have two people in the audience who used to work at Nuance. Remember, Samsung's S-Voice used Nuance.
And S-Voice was trash.
Awful.
By the way. Can we talk about how bad that
and
was?
And why did they put a voice assistant on a phone that already had Google's?
Are they going to get in an argument with each other, like Bixby and Google Voice?
Is
like
Bixby? Well, is that Bill Bixby? Was that Amazon?
Yeah, my money's on him.
God, I mean, well, you know, there's a lot of people who buy Samsung phones and don't realize they run Android.
Right.
I mean,
it's Samsung.
You know,
they're Samsung.
That's fair.
I've spoken with folks who are like, "Oh, you have an Android phone? No, I have a Galaxy." And you're like, "It runs Android." And they're like,
"No, no, no." But that's exactly right, and that's why people skin it, because they don't want you to think it's. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Pixel is the Google phone to get, the Android phone to get. But I will be very interested. And Samsung is number two after Apple. They are still an absolute presence. Mm-hmm.
Despite their Ford Pinot moment.
They had a Ford Pinot moment, but people still buy Fords. Yep. People still take Tylenol.
But they did retire the Pinto
brand. People still drink Classic Coke.
Eventually,
and eat Jack in the Box.
Yeah, nobody buys Pintos, though, right?
That's right.
Right. Yeah. So this Wednesday, which is March 29th, will be the announcement. They predict it'll be in late April, maybe April 21st. And some interesting looking colors, too, black, gray, and silver.
And is this the one that's going to have three cameras on it, one specifically for, like, retinal and face recognition?
Probably. I would guess that they will do that in this one. They put, as you may remember, they put eye recognition in the Note 7.
The Galaxy S3, but then they scrapped it after that. They kind of add features and take them away.
little googly. Yeah,
there will be a 5.7-inch S8, we think, according to the rumors. But I think it's very interesting, and there'll be a 6.2-inch version, an S8 Plus. Mm. That seems to me too big.
There's a point where it's too large.
I think 6 inches.
Phone can be too large. I have a purse. Even think sometimes when I'm holding up my phone, I'm like, this is a little bit large. Yeah.
And speaking of that, I think it would be a great prank, Leo, for just once for you to go into public with this thing and then take a call on it. Because that would just, it would be such a spoof.
You mean
the
with the
this whole, just sort of like picking it up and taking
the studio, the Surface Studio?
Yeah. It's just sort of spoof.
Let's do a bit for the new screensavers, and I will be carrying my Surface Studio around.
Taking a call.
You could say it's the new phone.
Hello? How big is too big?
Have it on your shoulder kind of like a boombox.
Right? hang it there. It's like,
You know, what'll probably happen, we'll watch the event and go, oh, it's just another phone. It's hard to come up with something new. I think the same problem, Apple's going to face the same problem this fall. It's hard to do anything new. It's a slab of glass with rounded corners. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do that's different? Bixby.
No.
I'm going to put a lovely case on it with a diamond ring. Is that so you can hold it?
So you can hold it, yeah.
So you can propose marriage to
because
whoever you're giving
large,
to.
Because the phone's large, then you know, you need, you know.
Forget the engagement ring. Buy a case that's 2 months' salary. There you go. No, these are cheap. These are $9.
They're a good
$9.99.
And is that the same brand that you got?
I think it is, because they have the floating hearts.
You got it on Amazon?
I got mine on Amazon,
I like the cherry blossom one. It's kind of cool.
I like the cherry.
Like
the cherry blossom floats. I don't think that those ones actually, the cherry blossom.
They say it's see, I saw iPhone 6S that had floating stuff.
Because I would have completely
to find one
gotten
for mine.
That one.
Yeah. You have the one with a ring?
No. No ring.
No ring. No ring.
Just sparkles.
All right. Our show today brought to you by Betterment. If you're saving for your future, and you ought to be, you always have the challenge of, well, where'd I put my money that would be better than the mattress? Actually, putting a savings account at your bank, that's about as bad as putting it in a mattress. You got to invest. But who has time for that? Nobody got time to watch your stocks every day. Well, here's Betterment. Tech has done so much to transform commerce and entertainment and ride-sharing and home security. But it is also now changing how you invest. Betterment, the largest independent automated investment service, is changing how people invest. And I like Betterment because they have people as well as computers. So this is something a little bit unusual about Betterment. They combine the smart technology with human advisors, so you get optimal results at every level of investment. You get access to their team of certified financial professionals, licensed financial experts. They're also monitoring your account along with the hardware and the software. They can answer questions. You can also have planning calls. You can get notifications throughout the year. But the Betterment software will be monitoring your investment every second of every day, making sure that it's properly balanced, that they do tax loss harvesting to lower investment taxes, increase after-tax returns. There are no trade, no transaction, no rebalancing fees, no minimum to sign up. I like that. You can dip your toe in Betterment and see how you like it. They use global diversification, smart rebalancing, and lower fees, and that means you're going to get higher returns than the typical DIY investor. End-to-end investing means faster cash transfers, tax forms available at the earliest possible date, secure investing. Now, as with everything in life, there's some risk involved in investment, but you got to no risk, no reward, right? But do it right. Get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more. Betterment is a better way to invest. Betterment.com/twit. Betterment.com/twit. Betterment is investing made better. This Week in Tech, it's great to have Georgia Dow in studio from iMore Magazine. She's also anxiety-videos.com. That's where she and her partner Sandra, both therapists, have videos on reducing anxiety, sleeping better, parenting. I wish you'd made those a few years ago. It's too late for me. Can I watch them now and just like retroactively tell my kids, okay, remember that time when I yelled at you? Next time, let's do it this way.
You could try. I don't know how effective it
would
be.
They're screwed up already. But the good news for your industry is they both have therapists. And they probably complain about me incessantly.
That could be the good and the bad, I think. Good and the bad of that.
Anyway, it's great to have you, Georgia Dow, in studio for the first time ever. I've never met her. And now I have. Rob Reed, you've been here before. It's always great to have Rob here. He is the guy who started Listen.com, Rhapsody, and then is a reformed entrepreneur, is now a science fiction writer. And you can find out more about his book, Year Zero, at Reed, R-E-A-D, Rob Reed, R-E-I-D.com. Where can they get the discount you were talking about? Is that on
digital Rob platforms? I say that way too. It's just too many
R's. 10 times fast.
If you go to Amazon and you search for Year Zero,
yeah,
you'll get the discount there too?
Yeah, for Kindle. So it's on digital platforms and it will be, here's $1.99.
Nice.
That's a bargain.
And you should read this.
And that is literally because I'm on Twit. And it's for this week. For everybody in the world is going to benefit from my being on Twit, but particularly Twit viewers. And thank you for giving me an excuse to go to Random House and say, let's do this cool thing. Because we did it once before when I was on Twit a couple of years ago. And it was just really fun, you know.
And is it okay to say this? Working on a new book?
Yeah, I've got a new book coming out this summer, which I'd like to talk about maybe when we get a little
Come
bit closer
back.
To it. Yeah, I'd love to. There's quite a bit to say about it and, you know, we may have more to say about it when I'm next here.
Sci-fi?
Near, very, very near future. Set 9 seconds into the future.
whenever you read the book. I was going to say.
It takes place 9 seconds from then.
I like this idea. Yeah.
You just have to read it really quickly.
I was talking this morning on the radio show about how science fiction signals to viewers that it's the future. And it's, of course, if it's the distant future, spaceships and, you know. But if it's the near future, it's harder. And for a long time, if it was a black president, you knew it was the future, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't work anymore, right?
Or if they were wearing tunics.
And then it was said they would do some sort of
weird hats.
Gentlemen stuff. In fact, they did that on She. Remember that with Scarlett Johansson as the artificial intelligence Joaquin Phoenix falls in love with her?
Yeah.
It was the near future, and the only way you could tell was they wore... Did I say him?
You said she.
Her. Some pronouns.
Yeah, their pants are high, right?
The only way you know it's the future is they wear their pants.
Now they're wearing the pants high.
So are they now?
They are. They're wearing really high.
They're very predictive, that show.
Hairstyles, fashion, cell phones, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Often they have clear cell phones in the future.
Mm.
They're using Nokias or something.
Yeah.
it's far in the future.
Parallel universe.
That's a problem because if you're making a science fiction movie today and you use anything that looks like a cell phone, you date yourself. I mean, it's like having a wide tie.
Yeah.
When I look at Wall Street, Michael Douglas in Wall Street, he's holding one of those giant phones.
Yeah.
It looks like ancient history.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if anybody saw Get Out, but everyone in that
loved
film
Get Out.
Uses a Windows phone. Yet.
That's a little,
it
I hate
It just throws
that.
Me off.
I know. I noticed that too, Nate.
Yeah, I love the movie. It's a great movie, but.
Oh, you must see it.
I have to see it.
The
yeah.
best movie good. Ever. Yeah. It's a new genre. Comedy horror. Actually, I guess that's not a new genre, but it's a really great movie. But you're right. They've got surfaces.
Yeah.
Surface tablets.
Yeah.
And then at one point he's sending a text on a Microsoft Windows phone. It's like,
yeah. And then he calls his buddy and his buddy picks up on a Windows phone and it's like,
dude,
call me on my Windows phone.
you just know.
Yeah. The logo's like always conveniently like right
there. I just heard it on my Zune.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how you know it's not the future. It's the way past. Yeah. Like
Zune.
Also here, Nathan Oliver as Giles. We love having Nathan in studio with us, and we are having more of him now.
Yeah.
All the time you could find him on
Twitter.
Because
you hired me.
I hired him.
No going back now,
Leo. I stole you away from the Journal. I feel like pretty good about that.
Yeah.
Nate OG, although you'll still be doing some work for them, I know, freelance work.
I'm going to be pitching some freelance stuff for them, yeah.
And you're still doing your podcast, your little kitchen table version of this show?
Well, not quite this show, but I'm doing a podcast called Buzzkill with my friends Mark Millian from Bloomberg and Brian X. Chen from the New York Times. And we spend about a half hour talking about tech, politics, and pop culture. And if any one of the three of us gets bored with the subject at hand, we hit a little buzzer and it kills the conversation and we move on.
That's fun. I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
So
we
that.
Need that
it's
here.
Like the X like the factor of like a show.
Yeah.
So everyone talks really fast and tries to be really punchy.
Exactly.
Otherwise, if not,
every time sports comes up, Brian hits the buzzer.
Really?
Yeah. He does not care about sports.
So does someone go around and take out the batteries of someone else's buzzer pressing it and they can't?
It's a laptop right in between all of us. And so, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
that's a great idea. For
it's on
podcast.
SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn.
Nice.
A lot.
Very scary to be a guest on that show, though.
Well, so far we've had no guests.
That would be bad.
I wonder why.
I'd have some anxiety.
Yeah. Well, right now it's just the three of us, but at some point someone will have to,
not
be on there. Yeah.
Step up.
So yeah.
If you want to get in on that,
sure.
I can get buzzed.
Couple of seconds, man. It's like the Gong Show. I love
real
that.
Out there. It's real. Yeah,
Chuck Barris just died.
Brilliant. Yeah, Chuck just
Barris.
Passed
I
away.
Saw that. You know,
CIA spy and game guy.
I know CIA spy assassin.
Was he really a CIA assassin?
I can't imagine.
I like the sound of it.
Or was he nutty?
Probably not true.
He claims he was.
Yeah. Yeah,
and there was even a movie.
There was even
about
a movie called My Dangerous Mind or something like that.
He can't.
Well,
have been
he took
a CIA
the secret
assassin.
To his grave.
I don't think so, but. There's wilder things that have happened in the world.
You know, I like the idea that we live in an interesting world, and a world in which Chuck Barris of the Gong Show was actually a CIA assassin that whole time is much more interesting than the world I think I inhabit. So also, yeah, I'd like that to be.
If you're going to be a CIA assassin, you don't want to be, you want to have good cover. That's a great cover story.
Yeah, it's like hiding in plain sight. It's like, oh, it's never going to be this guy, you know.
Yeah, I would not fear him.
Yes.
He might gong me. Instead, he pulls out a gun with a silencer and whacks me.
Maybe that was like his signature thing before he offed somebody. He's like, here's the gong. last words.
Confessions
heard
of a dangerous mind.
Evil Thank dictators you, everywhere.
Yeah.
You just got
so gonged. It's so funny. I did not know about this till Gizmodo wrote about it. But maybe you've heard about the Supreme Court case, Impression Products versus Lexmark. Impression Products is a small 35-person shop that was refilling printer cartridges. Actually, 25 people. They specialized in buying used printer cartridges and remanufacturing them. Lexmark, the printer company, had been suing other remanufacturers. They decided to add Impression to the case in 2012, 5 years ago. Everyone else settled.
Except for
the little Impressions product. And they fought it, and now they're in the Supreme Court. The
oral
arguments.
Is this a DMCA thing? Like that? Because yes. I remember Lawrence Lessig used to talk about the fact that the DMCA could be perverted to things as bizarre as people suing because you made ink for my printer. So this is a DMCA, and it's going to the Supreme Court.
It already is. They had oral arguments this week.
Wow.
Now, here's Ronald Mann writing in SCOTUS blog. He says, unfortunately, I don't think many people left the courtroom knowing much more about the case than they did when they entered. Perhaps the justices wore themselves out with so much incisive questioning in the Microsoft versus Baker case from the morning. But apparently the justices were kind of baffled by the whole thing. The case involves the doctrine of exhaustion. That's worse than a buzzer in a podcast.
Yeah.
Under which patent holder's rights to enforce his patent ordinarily run out the moment the patent holder sells the object. In other words, if I say I've got a patent on ink cartridges and sell you the ink cartridge, well, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you own the ink cartridge.
You can do what you want with it.
Yeah. So the question is, are Lexmark's rights to the cartridge is exhausted when it sells them. But Lexmark has shrink wrap on there that says you're not buying this cartridge.
You're borrowing
it. You're buying the ink?
You will only let you use it if you agree by opening the cartridge that you will not refill it.
The EULA thing.
Goodness.
Yeah.
I remember with
shrink
the,
wrap
by
license.
Ripping this thing open, you have agreed.
Yeah.
You're never gonna read this. I was one of those people, though, with, like, you know, the syringe and my little ink, and I try to refill the ink and get it everywhere. And
The real problem is that, and I think this, you know, this is probably a good thing. I don't think this, I wish the Supreme Court would address shrink wrap licenses or actual patent rights or.
Yeah.
But they're probably going to make it a very narrow decision because, and that's the right thing to do. You don't want to make. Chief Justice Roberts and Stephen Breyer probed repeatedly as to why patent holders can't just use cannot rely solely on contract law, but instead need patent law to enforce these restrictions. After listening to the Lexmark attorney's response, Breyer seemed confused. As we all are. I'm not sure how much of this I want to read, but they did talk about it. According to SCOTUS blog, my take on this, justices are well aware of the major implications here and don't see any obvious way to avoid doing something that will have real economic consequences. So maybe they will have to make a significant decision. This might be pretty important. I find it, as a consumer, reprehensible that they sell the, you know, and other companies do this. They put chips in the cartridge so you can't buy third-party cartridges.
Well, just the very notion that you've paid an extravagant amount of money for, like, a little tiny bit of ink, right? And then they sort of, you know, sneak up on you by saying on the wrapper, by opening this, you agree, you don't. I mean, that's just sleazy.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, it becomes such, you know, common sense rebels.
It's trickery. Yeah.
It becomes such a parody of itself that hopefully the Supreme Court saw that. Because, I mean, that's just, there's no way there's been informed consent has been given by somebody who had a market choice to make in that environment when they ripped open this. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so I hope that it's going to be 4-4, right? We know how it's going to turn out.
Unless someone does a lot of printing and they're like, you know what? I'm so done with this.
Yeah.
Because there's no way that you've read the small fine print when you've ripped something out. You can't really say that's a signature on something. I think that, like, a little bit of an overhaul to patent law would be just a good thing.
I think so, but if the judges go 4-4, could it go into Supreme Court overtime?
What does that even look like?
The real question is, wait for the next Gorsuch to come along. Which dogma are the justices going to adhere to? I mean, for instance, there's other big businesses who are in favor of the little business against Lexmark. Costco filed an amicus brief.
On whose side?
On the side of Impressions against Lexmark. Saying goods of all kinds, computers, smartphones, automobiles, even medicines, incorporate innumerable components made throughout the world. Each product developer and manufacturer would be required to trace the origin and the patent rights of every single component it purchases. That's too much to ask a retailer to do and a consumer to do.
It's like the Litigator Full Employment Act.
Yeah, well, we don't want that.
No.
Yeah. Aren't you trained as a lawyer?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
No.
Well, it sounded like for a second there. it kind of feels like, to me, this hits on the whole right to repair idea, right? So whether it's your sealed iPhone or, you know, the laptop that nobody opens up anymore, it's like, do we have the right to replace our ink cartridges or not? Do we have the right to open these things and fix these things
ourselves?
It's
kind of that right to repair issue, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Lexmark says no.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that to me is the question that I hope the Supreme Court really gets at. And, you know, getting into patent law, will there be consequences or not? But I feel like that's what this is about is you buy the printer. Do you have the right to put your own ink in it, right?
Right.
And of course, Lexmark wants you to keep buying their ink. We get that. But the idea that you can't go anywhere else for ink and that you can't repair this printer that won't work without the ink any other way is just it's ludicrous. So that's what I hope they really dig into.
A Supreme Court decision in favor of Lexmark could open the floodgates for copy protection in everything you buy. You don't own anything. We're already moving in that direction with digital rights. You don't own anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of like what it is with a cable box. They, you know, they send it to you, and it's not really yours.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you can only fill your car with gas bought at Exxon.
Right.
Because yeah. your yeah, manufacturer has done a deal done with a deal. Exxon. And yeah, yeah. it's
So there's a very dangerous slope here that you know, I don't even want to call it slippery. Like, it's like we can see the future and it's not a pretty one.
And I wonder, it's interesting, I wonder if the natural reaction of the conservatives on the court or the liberals on the court will be to go one side or the other, if this is something, because on one side you could see people who are like militant about property rights doing one thing or the other. Like, I wonder if there's going to be a left-right ideological break.
Well, Breyer, who is considered to be
a Democratic appointee mm-hmm. and considered to be on the left,
yeah.
actually said conflicting things. So on the one hand, he said any monopolist, including a patent monopolist, would love to be able to go to each buyer separately and extract from each buyer and user the maximum amount he'd pay for that particular item. But by and large, that's forbidden under many laws, even though it does mean slightly restricted output. Mm-hmm. It also means a lower profit for the monopolist.
Which
but then he
pro
said,
little guy.
That's yeah. pro impressions. Yep. But then he said, when discussing the application of U.S. patent law overseas, they've received money for that first sale under, say, let's say a German patent, have not received any money on this American patent. So they say, well, how could you be subjecting us to a rule that first sale exhausted our right to money under the American patent when we never even got any money under the American patent? So that's a kind of a pro Lexmark argument. So
he was also described in the article as confused, correct?
Yeah, that was my take.
Oh, that was
and now you know why.
Well, it seems accurate. Definitely.
This often happens though in Supreme Court oral arguments. The justices will take sometimes do that. They will hypotheticals. They'll take opposite sides. It's often difficult to figure out where they stand on a case. We'll find out June the next time that this might crop
it's
up.
Very important. Case.
Yeah, I don't think it's well covered because it's kind of confusing.
Yeah.
But as geeks, we should pay attention. And of course, somebody in the chat room said, don't forget that great Motherboard article about American farmers hacking their tractors with Ukrainian firmware.
Ooh, love it.
Because, of course, John Deere won't let you modify your... In fact, if you get your John Deere tractor repaired by a third party, you then have to... this is from a license agreement that John Deere required farmers to sign last year. You then have to go to John Deere and get it authorized so that you can continue to use it.
Continue to use it?
Yeah.
Like they
you
may
because
no
you
longer
license
use
the software, yes.
You may no longer use the,
so
tractor you
third-party technicians.
Because they control the software.
John Deere charges $230 an hour. Yeah. $230 plus $130 an hour for the technician to drive out and plug a connector into the USB port to authorize the new part.
Yeah.
So you get the new part, you get somebody to put it in, doesn't have to be a John Deere, but then you have to have a John Deere guy come out and charge you a minimum of $360 to say, yeah, okay, you can use it.
These guys are basically jailbreaking their tractors.
Yeah.
Essentially, right?
So he says what you've got is technicians running around with cracked Ukrainian John Deere software they bought off the black market.
Love it.
Here it is, Cartech Systems. And you just you check the box and you generate the key.
Good.
$99 so the guy doesn't have to come out.
And then you can sell your tractor for more because you're like, mine's a hacked tractor.
Wow.
That's better.
A hacker.
Wow.
Hacker. Yeah. I like that.
Hacktivists are big and
hacktivists.
Hacktivists are very big in Nebraska right now. It's a thriving.
It's a similar thing that Elon Musk said though, that if you're driving my cars, you can't be using that to be able to, like, you know, a free Uber car that's going to be driving itself, because they want to go into business to be able to have their own self-driving cars to be like a taxi service to that.
Yeah.
So they're also trying to control how you use something and not really yours. Like, you're signed on to buy it, then you have to not drive it and, you know, never drive left or something else.
Now, I heard that also it was going to be forbidden to listen to untasteful music in Teslas.
Only in alien societies.
Yes.
But we don't know what those aliens like to listen to.
Oh, we do, though.
One person does.
We do.
One man does.
Yes,
one man does. Like I said, based on a true story.
it's kind of a shame, all this stuff, because, you know, You want technology to be like a beautiful thing that pushes us all forward, like opens up new possibilities, you know, expands the capabilities of what we have, allows us to have a better life. But at the same time, there's this old school idea, which I really love, which is like hot rodding and tuning and, like, you know, messing with what you got and customizing things. And, you know, we're getting to this point where tech is so ubiquitous and there's so much software in cars nowadays that you buy a new car, you pop the hood, and it's covered in plastic. You can't even work on it yourself, you know. And I come from a background of doing that sort of thing.
Really?
Yeah, with my dad.
You're so young. I thought you would have grown up in the era of no serviceable parts in these things.
No, I mean, the first car I had was a 5-liter Mustang that my dad and I bought together, and it had no door panels, no center console. it had a roll cage and 4-point racing harnesses, but, you know, it was that sort of thing. It's like, you know, you can get in and turn a wrench and do some stuff. Now,
I used to change the oil, tune the car up. You'd have a little voltmeter, and you could check the timing. And
that stuff.
Those
was,
are in old school Volkswagens.
Yeah, so that stuff was fun, but there were also technological advancements that came from that, right? I mean, one of the things that, like, racing has done is resulted in safer vehicles and better efficiency.
I wouldn't want to try to change the oil on my Tesla.
Yeah,
I don't even think there is oil.
There see these sorts of things. These sorts of things, like, they
where's the oil?
They block that.
Yeah,
they block that, like, outside of your company ingenuity. They block that kind of creativity.
Well, then they killed shade tree mechanics. I mean, unless you're working on an old car, there are no shade tree mechanics.
Yeah, there's nothing like that anymore, right? So and I find it offensive and kind of sad in just our daily lives. But damn, man, you know, there's not even that many farmers left, and you're screwing with those guys. You know, and you know, it's just the whole idea. And like, I get why John Deere would want to control some things, but make it as simple as, hey, you voided the warranty, but if you come back and you pay us, we'll still fix it for you. Like, why do you got to screw us over in every possible angle?
These things are more than just, you know, you say tractor, you think of a guy sitting on a thing bouncing down the road.
Yeah.
But these are
we industrial have machines.
They're machinery. Yeah, we have a listener.
Rolling factories.
Who owns a farm in Western Australia. He was up here a couple of months ago. And he says, I listen to you while I'm working on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And he literally spends his whole day sitting in what is like an office on a giant combine.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have much
robots,
to do.
Basically.
Yeah. The thing is a huge, you know, giant machine. And he's not steering it.
Yeah.
He says, I said, well, don't you have to do it? He said, well, when we get to the end of the row, I have to tell it to go to the next row.
Yeah.
But so he can listen to podcasts. He's there kind of keeping an eye on it. But so you understand this is not – there's a lot of software in these things.
Yeah, and I get why John Deere would want to say, listen, or any company would want to say, we've built a complicated product. It's built to work a specific way. If you mess with it, it might be dangerous. It might not be not good or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I get that, but some things feel kind of petty when when a guy is driving out to plug in a USB port and you got to pay him a few hundred bucks.
There's a difference between trying to make sure that it's safe and we're not going to take warranty of, like, if something bad happens, we're not going to be the ones that are going to.
Yeah, this feels like leading people drive.
This is trying to squeeze out of people as much as you can so that you're kind of stuck.
Exactly.
And there's nothing else that you can do unless you have a certain amount of technical knowledge. Exactly. To be able to go around that.
So a lot of people have been talking about their first cars in the chat room. Just to bring this first circle, mine was a Pinto.
Oh,
really? About those Pinto moments?
Yep.
Oh, man.
It never did blow up.
No,
it never did detonate.
Thankfully.
Yeah.
Gosh. Wow. Well, two Fords here. All right.
Yeah.
Mine was a Ford as well.
A Ford what?
I think it was I don't remember.
Tempo.
Was it a Tempo?
Oh, okay.
Anthony knows.
Very three, cool.
Four. Yeah.
I would tell you what mine is, but it's the answer to one of my secret questions. So,
There you go.
I hope yours isn't.
Yeah. Oh, it's the answer to one of my secret questions too, but I lied on the answer. I didn't want to admit it was a Pinto.
You didn't even want, when they go searching for your data, like, you don't want them to know this.
You're like, Ferrari.
If I do get hacked, it'd be so humiliating for the world to know that I had a Pinto. But now, of course,
we'll talk about it on a podcast.
Admitted it on Twitter.
There's nothing wrong with humble beginnings. Be proud of that Pinto. Be proud of that.
I am proud of the Pinto.
There you go. There you go.
I'm proud of the Pinto.
Did you, by the way, speaking of, I'm just looking at some of the big harvesters. This is probably something like the thing our listener.
That was what
sits
my Pinto
in.
Looked like.
That's just like that. Did you see the picture of the president driving the Mack truck?
Oh, God.
Yeah. I am amazed that we didn't see more meme action around him going like this.
There was a decent amount. There was one where he was in a little play school pedal car, which was pretty good. I don't know if you guys have seen
that. Was this like Dukakis on the tank again?
Yeah.
Just to date myself.
Yeah, except that there's no election. There's no means back then, right?
Yeah.
There's actually a whole series of pictures. I suppose he was meeting with truck manufacturers.
he looked really happy, though.
He was having a... He got to pull the horn, and the video's not available. Too bad. But there he is... There he is.
It's like little Tyrannosaurus Rex hands.
Having a good time. These are not Photoshopped kids. These are real. You know, we had a fun week. Didn't we have a fun week? You were great on the new Screensavers.
That was so exciting.
Loved having you on. Nate's
Thank
great
you.
On the
new.
Yeah, let's take a little look at some of the fun things that happened this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
If you can't afford a red phone, you can at least get the new product Red Case.
I don't use cases.
No,
I don't use cases at all. I stick it in here and
all about Android.
Like Christmas coming early, Google released the Android O developer preview. The developer preview version hit, and it is now available for download and install, and everyone has been scrambling to check it out.
Tech news today.
Nate was talking about a game called Everything, where you can play as anything, a blade of grass.
Everything is a strange experience in which you don't really have an ending, and then you just start to really ask yourself, what am I? Who am I? Where are you? What is Twit? You know, it's just a lot of important questions.
This is your brain. This is your brain on Twit. Any questions?
Yeah, you'll have fun.
I mean, I'm beautiful the way I am. There's no need to put me
put Jim in a case, that's for sure. Jim Dalrymple, he keeps his phone in his beard. I think he's capable of that. Megan Maroney, what's coming up this week?
Here's just a few of the stories that we'll be looking at in the week ahead. Samsung will hold an event to unveil their latest flagship phone, the Galaxy S8. The company is hoping for the latest Galaxy to make a big splash to finally put the Note 7 debacle behind them. RIP Club Penguin, one of the first social networks for kids, is finally shutting down on the desktop and mobile devices on March 29th. It started nearly 12 years ago in 2005. Brian McClendon, vice president of Maps and Business Platform at Uber, also plans to leave the company this week. Probably someone else will leave Uber this week, too, if I had to bet on it. Bluetooth World in Santa Clara, Black Hat in Asia, and April Fool's Day are all happening this week. Plus, March 31st is World Backup Day. So back up your stuff, my friends. That's just a few of the stories we'll be following this week on Tech News Today, every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific and 7 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv.
Thank you, Megan Maroney. And you had some fun. You were filling in for Jason this week.
Yeah, I've been filling in for Jason Howell all last week and Monday and Tuesday. I thank the audience for suffering with me. but no, it's been a lot of fun for me. And I guess I'll be kind of filling in every once in a while when they take vacation or something like that.
But I think you'd be doing more than that.
Oh, well, yeah. And creating, hopefully, developing
Get
some
to work.
Shows. So, yeah.
Samsung, by the way, is offering a app you can install on your Android device called Unpacked 2017. If you're lucky enough to have an invitation to the event this week in New York City, you can use it to get in with a QR code. But if you're not going, it will stream video and so forth. And we'll do our live stream. Mm-hmm. Thing as well with the Mystery Science
it'll
Theater.
It'll be more fun than that
commentary.
App for sure.
I think it'll be a lot more fun. A lot more fun.
Honestly, like, I really enjoy Samsung's press events because they're kind of
they're so bad.
All the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if anybody else feels
that. They're terrible.
That's the best part of watching. You just get to see it live.
Yeah.
You get to see cool tech, and you get to see when things don't really happen the way that they smoothly.
They have a lot of tech, like errors and flubs, and then, you know, they had that, like, overproduced, like, Broadway show in New York that one time.
That was horrible, where women said, oh, I can't touch the phone because my fingernails are drying.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can just
really
wave my...
It was so offensive.
Yeah.
So I always look forward to seeing...
You never know.
You're looking forward to a train wreck is what you're hoping for.
Every time.
Yeah. I am going to be in New York City next week.
Are you?
I don't know how it's...
Oh, I can get you in. You want to go? I got an invite.
I'll
get
now.
You could be a reporter for On the Scene.
That'd be kind of fun.
And now we go to the reporter on the scene. Rob Reed has the latest. Oh, my God. It was the worst thing I ever saw, Leo.
I'll get a fedora.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you still, for some reason, inexplicable reason, have a Note 7, by the way, this is the month Samsung is going to kill it. Literally, remotely, turn it into a brick.
Good. Good. If you're still using one, just stop.
What is wrong with you? If it hasn't melted by now, it's probably okay, right?
No, it's not okay. It's never okay.
No, Leo, no.
Nate thinks he's talking to his elderly father, grandfather, maybe great-grandfather. Dad, get rid of the Note 7.
Well, if it hasn't blown up yet,
it hasn't blown up yet, Nate.
Blow up tomorrow.
I'm still driving my Pinto. Yeah. It hasn't blown up yet. It's got to be one of the good ones.
You've published books. It's time to buy a new car.
You can afford a new car.
I'll co-sign for you.
So what do you need? Before the show, you know, Jason mentioned on All About Android. I guess that was Ron mentioning Android O is out.
Yeah,
This is the beta version. It'll be this fall before we see the next version of Android.
I hope you see some new features, because all you were talking about was like snoozing notifications and battery life.
They're trying to, but that's a big issue. I mean, Apple does it so well.
Battery's nice, and you know, cutting off all of the things that are running in the background, that's great, but it's not something that's really going to drive a lot of press.
Exactly. Those are the sorts of things they should be doing. Give me some like cool, flashy stuff.
Yeah, that should just be automatic.
Exactly.
Every phone reset from time immemorial promise better batteries? Like, it's like...
Yeah.
Like, it'd be great if it was going to deliver that.
But it's probably not going to be the headline, better battery life.
Yeah.
No. Right?
No.
Like, they have no headline, these ones aren't going to melt in your pocket, better battery life.
No, it's really going to be about what dessert are we naming.
That's what I'm wondering.
Ooh, yes.
With now this what do we do with this
We spent some time on this, and in fact, I think because of us, if you do a Google search for, you start, it'll autocomplete to O dessert names. Apparently, many people searching for desserts that begin with O.
Well, do we know that's the whole internet or just like your search history?
I think it's the whole internet. Oh, sorry. Yes.
He logged in anonymously.
It's the whole internet.
He logged in anonymously through a VPN in Kazakhstan, and even there.
But his ISP was tracking the data, so they knew.
Yeah.
Right.
It turns out if you go to Wikipedia and look at desserts, there are very few O desserts. Android Central's put together a few. Ox tongue pastry.
That doesn't roll off the tongue in a nice way.
It's a Chinese treat. And this is one of the problems, of course. They need a name that is not specifically American. They need a name that's international, right? Nougat was really, it's very international.
Ozark is a foreign country, right?
This is my favorite. You don't like Oint-Bake-Koek, which is a Dutch cookie loaf spiced and sweetened, served with butter at breakfast time.
That's my second favorite.
The Ozarks are in Arkansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah. So the mountains.
Olay boy, which is actually literally oil balls, a type of Dutch donut made by dunking dough into a deep fat fryer. I don't think Android O. Olay ball is going anywhere. And this is your favorite, Ozark pudding.
Or do you, Ozark pudding.
I'd never heard of this.
Yeah, I had it down in Florida once. Which is not far from the Ozarks, as it turns out.
It's a dried fruit and nut custard.
I had it in Atlanta.
So disgusting and dry that they usually put a scoop of ice cream on it to sweeten it up.
The Android Ozark pudding.
It's like
just
like eating the composite wood inside of an IKEA dresser.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, so you really need that ice cream.
It was the favorite dessert of President Harry Truman.
Mm-hmm.
There was only so much choice then.
Well, oatmeal cookie.
I like oatmeal cookie.
I can get behind oatmeal cookie.
That's a two-worder. I don't think you're going to have a two-worder.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Harry
S. Truman on Twin Peaks, I believe, was fond of Ozark pudding. No, I'm just making that up. But his name was Harry S. Truman, the sheriff.
But they did go to that diner.
It's
and
the
they would
former president.
Pie and stuff.
Yeah. This is where pies go to die. Oreettes, which is a Catalan pastry that looks like ears.
Looks like ears or like papyrus.
Yeah.
Yeah,
fried crispy kind of thing.
But everybody seems to agree Oreo is the one it should be.
Oreo is what I'd like to see, but I would be thrilled if it was Ozark.
Ozark pudding would make me so happy.
Man, I really hope you're right, Rob.
Yeah,
I really do.
The problem also is I think Google got burned with Kit Kat, where they were used a brand name, and I think people, journalists particularly, I resented having to say Kit Kat all the time. Like, that was sounding like an ad for Nestle.
Does it make me a bad journalist that I thought it was fun?
You thought it was cool?
I like Kit Kats, too. I'm okay with that.
You're more of a journalist than I am, Nate. Man. If you say it's okay,
You do so many shows, though, Leo. You have to say it a lot more often.
Well, the only good news is whenever we do finally get the new phone and the new Android, people pile onto our table here whatever dessert.
Mm.
So we've had nougat.
Ooh.
We've had lollipops. We've had jelly beans. And yes... we've had Kit Kat bars.
Yeah. So now you're hoping it's not Ozark because you'd have to eat it on
pile
air.
Ozark pudding on the table? No, it's got to be Oreos. They got to make a deal.
There's rarely a G included in that. Yeah.
Ozark pudding.
Ozark pudding.
So why? So Carson had the same reaction I did. Google, their messaging strategy is so confusing. As a Google Voice user and Google Fi user, have been using Hangouts because it's the only messaging platform you can use on Google that works on iPhone, it works on the desktop, it works everywhere.
Yep.
And that's why I use it.
Text messages, yeah.
It's ugly. It's not a great message, but you use it too, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And I hate the iOS app because it's so slow
horrible,
and frustrating.
But
because it's so useful and because so many of my friends use it, I stick with it.
I have it on every phone, and I have it on every desktop. I have it, you could see on my my Chrome, I have a Chrome extension for it. It's the closest thing Google has, Android has, to Apple Messages.
Yeah.
Where it's cross-platform. And it's got the desktop. I think having it desktop was because they're going to take SMS support out of it.
I made the mistake of porting my phone number that everybody in the world has over to Google Voice.
Right.
Which has just been a catastrophe.
Oh,
and it's
really?
Like, yeah. And they came out with a new app, and literally the new app on the iPhone, what it does is when you hit the button that summons basically the dial pad, that is a crash the app button.
I've installed
and uninstalled probably 20 times. So I'm literally getting a new phone, which I'm due for, and switching providers in order to finally claw my
number
phone number
back
from Google Voice. And, you know, they got Hangouts. Do they still have Google Talk? They have
This is part of the phase out of Google Talk.
Got it. Okay, yeah.
They did say that if you use Google Voice or Google Fi, which I do, that you will still have SMS support. But you got to think that the days are numbered.
They're trying to move everybody to Android Messenger.
I don't know. Telephony products, right?
That's what the problem is, right?
They're trying to
do a little bit of a culling. It just might not have been the one that they should have given the axe.
Allo has Google Assistant built in. Make Allo your SMS choice.
Well, that's where this is going. They're trying to turn Allo into the consumer
app,
But it doesn't do SMS yet. Well, not yet, but it will someday. And Hangouts, which is what consumers were using and people were fairly happy with, which was a decent product and one of their most popular messaging, I think, options outside of like Gmail.
Because you could use it everywhere.
They're trying to pivot that into an enterprise product,
right? It's part of G Suite.
Exactly. So then they're sunsetting Google Talk, and now what you're going to have in Gmail is going to be rebranded as Hangouts, which is kind of silly because it's always worked with the Hangouts app anyways, so no one will even be able to pick that up. So they're literally like sunsetting Talk, sunsetting parts of Hangouts to pivot you into enterprise, trying to build up Allo. And then there's messaging inside of Google Voice, too. So it's a total cluster.
And this is one of the smartest companies in the world that allowed this to happen by launching 19 products. Well, and then I love the fact that we're talking, again, this is Google. They are the smartest company in the world.
They are.
And they're
saying,
well, they haven't gotten around to SMS yet. Yeah. It's like, that's 1993 technology, isn't it?
That's where
right? And they're like,
start.
Oh, we can't quite do that yet. Yeah. It's nine of our telephony products, just not the 10th one
This is one of the things that I both love and hate about Google is like, they're so willing to just do this out in the open and just say, let's see if it works. Like, let's just build this crazy thing. And like, I don't know. Like, Nexus Q, Google Glass. Like, let's just mess around with messaging. And they just don't think things all the way through. And it's fun because you get to see these decisions and these mistakes and we all get to learn together. But at the same time, if you use
this
stuff,
it's not fun when you can't
totally screws you over. Yeah, exactly.
And Google Glass, they're giving you something that you didn't already use. They're not taking away your eyes and giving you Google Glass and you're forced to have to use them.
Yeah, that would be a bad thing.
That would be bad.
I'm sure it came up in the world.
That would have been a bad thing.
Can we take people's eyes?
Particularly if they'll survive.
Well, they are working on the content.
The contact lenses, which, you know, will probably fry her.
But with this, I think part of what the issue is, just from speaking with people who work on messaging products, you know, over the years and reporting on these sorts of things, is that I think they really see that there is this important thing happening in messaging that they weren't able to key into. And that's really, you know, a lot of apps like Line, like building an operating system.
Well, but
and
that's
other
what
apps
our,
on top of
the
it.
Rich communication that's services,
exactly.
RCS, is all about.
Yeah.
Google bought a company called Jibe, which had this technology, and they're trying to convince the carriers and all the users to, and by the way, Android Messenger supports RCS, to move to this RCS standard, which would replace SMS standard, do much of the same things that Apple's Messages does.
And this move is almost an Apple-esque move where they're like, you know, let's just go to USB Type-C. Like,
we'll
even though you're still using that other thing.
Yeah.
Let's just force your hand.
Exactly.
Part of the problem is that carriers have to agree.
Yep.
And carriers have their own agendas. Sprint's using it, sort of. It's kind of a mess.
Yeah. To a certain extent, there's another part here that I think is important is that they want people to take on the Google Assistant and messaging with it and having that. And Allo, to a certain extent, is a little bit of an experiment, and they don't want to alienate the people who love and use Hangouts with that.
Well, then kill Allo, kill Hangouts, right. Make Android messages do everything it's supposed to do. And I think that's their goal. But there's
the way that they do it. And I think that a lot of companies, and I'll just talk right to the camera, companies, listen to me, tech companies. Once people are comfortable using your technology and like it, small, incremental changes to the better. Don't suddenly just take away people's, 3.5 millimeter headphone jack. Just don't take it away. Give us a better option. Once we get comfortable, slowly shift the call. Because people get really angry. You use something, you're comfortable with it, it works. Then you change it, and then we end up with that anxiety, that tech anxiety of, is it going to work? What's going to happen? Am I going to have to change everyone over to it? And we're unsure of that, and that causes a lot of distress. It's unnecessary.
Sparkly phone case can't fix
that. That is true. That is true.
I'm still getting over the loss of
that, you're using that to hypnotize
Google Reader.
Oh, you're still getting over the loss of Google Reader.
Still getting over the loss of Google Reader, yeah.
Ah, man.
Yeah.
I'm still missing Wave.
Wave, right, yeah.
Enough of that. Let's take a break. Come back with more. Great to have you all here. Nathan Oliveris-Giles. Nate OG. Man, if I had the name Nate OG, I'd use that all the time. I love
Would
that.
Would you?
Original Gangsta Nate.
I like that. That is catchy. You have to go with that.
Nate OG. It's his Twitter handle.
I
mean,
like it.
You know,
Nate OG.
Street cred everywhere I go, basically.
When you get when you get your YouTube channel, you go, hey guys, Nate OG here. Hey guys!
I don't want to say hey guys,
but you have to. No, that's a YouTube. That's a YouTube requirement. Hey guys, Nate OG, and you have to say it so fast nobody knows what you just said.
No.
Also, Rob Reed, he is a entrepreneur and now a lapsed entrepreneur, now science fiction author. RobReed.com. He's at Rob_Reed on the Twitter, REID, and the wonderful Georgia Dow, who is. Graced us for a couple of days. You were on the new screensavers. It was so great having you and your husband Anthony. And you're going to spend a little time in the wine country and then go back to. Is it freezing cold in Montreal right now?
It snowed. It had. There was a big storm. We went down and took a look at the cameras and it was just like straight across.
And if you don't think she's crazy, she left her kids with Renee Ritchie.
Renee,
which is nuts.
Renee is awesome. He is awesome. My kids are having the best time.
He's like that They're uncle that never grew up, kind of. He's like that kid uncle.
He's
yeah.
great. He's yeah. great fun. His mom's
they really
amazing.
Love it?
I love it. Really, the kids are like, you know, when
Don't
are you coming
back?
And then they're like, no, it's all good. Don't worry. Things are great. And then I have photos from them of, like, you know, hot chocolates and Pokemon hunting and watching movies and going for long walks.
Fun.
They don't do that with me. So they're
It feels
go
like
some
I
draw.
The I'm more... It's like a tight family. Like, you guys really, it's not just that you work together. You guys are all buds.
Yes.
It's really
it's
nice.
Really, it's I really like nice. That. And when you work with people that you really like, it comes through.
Yeah. iMore.com. You can see Georgia's work. And, of course, if you want to get her videos, anxiety-videos.com. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, the best mortgage lender in the country. Quicken Loans. Actually, great story, Quicken Loans. They are revitalizing downtown Detroit. Did you know? You probably knew that.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of an amazing story. The guy who owns them, I can't remember his name.
Dan Gilbert. He owns the Cleveland Cavaliers.
He owns the Cavs.
Yeah.
He doesn't own the Pistons. He doesn't own any Detroit teams. He's a Detroiter.
No, he doesn't. But he's supposedly, like, working with the owner of the Pistons to bring the Pistons back into the city.
He really wants... He loves
Detroit.
He's from Detroit. And he wants to bring Detroit back, which I completely applaud. It's a beautiful city. It really deserves to be one of the great American cities. Anyway, that's where Quicken Loans is headed. Is headquartered, but he also is a tech. Dan loves tech, and so you know they are one of the largest mortgage lenders in the country. I think $92 billion in loans last year, and they realize that a lot of people, us, don't want to go into an office. We don't want to go through paperwork. We just want to do it all online. So Quicken Loans, one of the best lenders in the country. Made this whole online process for getting your mortgage approved called Rocket Mortgage. It's amazing. It's at quickenloans.com/twit2. quickenloans.com/twit and the number 2. You go there and you can literally get approved for a mortgage or a refi in minutes because
It's all online. It's all computerized. You submit all the paperwork, whether it's check statements or pay stubs or whatever, electronically. Couldn't be easier. You even get to choose your rate and your length of loan in real time so you can completely customize it. And then you will get approved not in days or weeks or months, but in minutes for a loan that's just right for you. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Do it all online. QuickenLoans.com/twit2. QuickenLoans.com/twit2. No more frustration. No more fax machines. No more going into the mortgage office and doing this stuff. Just do it all online and do it fast. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. QuickenLoans.com/twit2. We thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. Yeah, sometime I'm going to do more on RCS because I feel like that this is something Google's all behind, this rich communication service. They've got some global partners, but it seems like American carriers say, we want to do it ourselves. And this is clearly the end game on Android messaging, but we're so far away from it.
It would be nice to dive into it and really see what's the hype about.
Like, yeah.
You know, what is the benefit?
Yeah.
You know, why is Google so hot on this?
Right.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. Other Google stories. So one thing Google does do very well is they enforce their view of how the internet should be run, and they've been pissed off at Symantec for some time because Symantec apparently has been kind of fast and loose with their certs. You can buy certs from Symantec. In fact, they're one of the biggest cert companies in the world. 30% of all of the internet certificates in 2015 come from Symantec. In fact, according to Firefox, Symantec issued certificates are responsible for 42% of all certificate validations. However, Google ain't happy. Google says Symantec has misissued more than 30,000 certificates. So Chrome is going to stop recognizing the extended validation status of certificates issued by Symantec. Now, that's a big deal.
Because wouldn't that affect the 48% of them that are valid?
All the people that use it.
Yeah.
So the way they're going to do this is kind of gradually. They'll decrease the maximum age of Symantec certificates over a series of releases. So Chrome 59, which is three versions from now, will limit the expiration to no more than 33 months. By Chrome 64, 9 months. So they're phasing them out. Now, you could still, if you don't get the extended cert, I'm on, let's see, if I go to Amazon, for instance, the extended cert, it will turn green and you will see the company name, Amazon.com or Microsoft.com. That means that the cert authority has gone to the company. They've called them, they've verified, they've taken extra steps to verify this really is Symantec. The less, the certs like for Twit that we use are not extended. They're cheaper. Extended certs are very expensive. They just send you an email verifying that you own the domain somehow, you know, and then they send you a cert. And that's what we use. So it's not like you're going to be able to go to these sites and they won't be secure anymore. Although I do worry that over time that may become Google's strategy.
Well, like basically you'll see a pop-up and then you'll be given a warning, and then if you want to proceed, you have to say so.
Yeah, site is not, you've seen it before.
Yeah. Which is just a pain to have to do. It seems kind of petty.
Well,
like a punishment, really.
It's to preserve the integrity of the cert system. And Symantec has just been kind of, talked a lot about it on Security Now. They've just been fast and loose with this stuff. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you think this is more of them trying to ensure that everything's going to be secure than them trying to be punitive in nature?
It seems to me like it's Google basically like kind of tugging on the leash a little bit and saying, like, get it together. You've been slacking off. And since some of them are in question, all of them aren't good here anymore. Yeah. It's kind of
a negotiating tactic.
Yeah.
Like, this may be something, don't be surprised if this never actually gets implemented.
Yeah.
Like, I think that if I were Symantec, I'd be wide awake at this point.
Well, they're pissed. Cool. They said, Google's statements about our issuance practices and the scope of our past misissuances are exaggerated and misleading. They say 30,000. Symantec says, Google's referring to 127 certificates that were identified as misissued by a third-party security researcher. They resulted in no consumer harm. We've taken extensive remediation measures to correct the situation. We immediately terminated the involved partner's appointment as a registration authority.
and in a move to strengthen the trust of Symantec, issued SSL TLS certificates, discontinued our RA program. They were selling, these certs were being issued by a third party mm-hmm. through Symantec. Mm-hmm. Google says, well, this remains an ongoing discussion.
I love the gap from 127 to 30,000.
That's a big jump.
Well, we're just going to round it up to the nearest 30,000. You know?
Google's prickly. And, you know, I've had little problems with Google before. You know, they... But on the other hand, they feel like they're kind of responsible. If somebody doesn't enforce this stuff, and it's, of course, the browser makers that have the most power in this, Microsoft, yeah.
And
Apple,
no browser is bigger than
Google,
Chrome
Firefox.
These days.
Yeah. Chrome's a big one.
Well, you know, going back to the negotiating tactic idea, right? Google mentioning that this is an ongoing discussion.
Right.
Also, the version of Chrome that this would run is like 18 59. Weeks away.
Right.
Right. So it's three versions, and they
so maybe
every
this
six
is all
weeks.
Just there's like, guys, time. Take yeah. this serious, yeah. Yeah. So or we're going
to
do this.
Yeah. So there's time. You know, they're basically saying in 18 weeks, this is going to the public. You know, it's
they're like
versions
two
out.
Cars heading toward each other, playing a game of chicken. Only one is at this moment. One is in Vermont, and the other is in California. And there's a lot of time to swerve that wheel.
Well, if they're self-driving cars, they could hit some things along the way. So let's
well, only if it's a well. No, I won't. Say
no, Uber self-driving cars
wasn't
were,
their fault. Yeah.
Wasn't their fault. Yeah.
It never
a car
is.
Did not yield to them.
It never is
failure to yield to Uber.
Well, off maybe Steve head. Mnuchin is right. Our Treasury Secretary says, oh, don't worry about losing your job to artificial intelligence and automation. It's 50 to 100 years off. We don't have to think about that. It's not, he said, it's, now he's not, he, admittedly, he's Treasury, not, you know, Labor Department, but he says it's not.
He's Treasury, but he used to be the Chief Information Officer at Goldman Sachs. He also used to run hedge funds. And
even Goldman Sachs says automation is coming soon.
Exactly. So in his past job, it was his job to know like what technology is coming, what could be disruptive and transformative. And now that Stephen Mnuchin, I mispronounced his Munchin last week.
Or Munchkin.
Mnuchin.
Just don't call him Munchkin.
Yeah, I think that's right. Now that he's the Secretary of Treasury, now he's saying 50 to 100 years off, which – you want to talk about asleep at the wheel, like that is just ludicrous.
Well, I don't know if it's so much asleep at the wheel or this is a choice, right? They're the kind of the tactic of like no one create panic, don't worry, everything's going to be okay so that, you know, he doesn't have to do anything about it. And then when his term's up, it's like, okay.
And he can say 9 years out. Then it'll be
50 to 100 years. If we look back 100 years from now, the way that technology went and the way that technology is speeding up, that's...
I should point out
absolutely ludicrous kind of head in the sand.
In the same interview with Axios, he said that Donald Trump has perfect genes. So maybe everything he said was 100% credible. But it's our opinion, I think.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I've talked to a lot of people, and there are people who say, like John Markoff, automation is coming, but it's not going to necessarily cost every job. We're going to have jobs to replace the jobs that are lost. So, for instance, if you're a truck driver or a cabbie, this probably is a good time to start thinking about training up for something different.
And I think that's what the conversation should be.
But that's what the government
leaders
should be doing.
They should say, listen, automation is coming. In some cases, it's already here. If you've been to a grocery store, you've seen the automated checkout. If you've, you know, if you've gone to a bank, you've seen a lot of ATMs. Like, these things are slowly happening. So let's retrain folks. Let's find out what those new jobs are going to be that will be created and hopefully be a better quality of life for everyone. Let's figure that out. And to say that it's 50 to 100 years off, is irresponsible.
It's sticking your head in the sand.
It's irresponsible.
I don't know, though, about the thought of that there'll be... I think that there'll be new jobs to replace it, but I do not think that they will be in the same number because a machine can do things much faster to many more people. And I think that the quality of jobs and the amount of education that, you know, in some places is not free to be able to have to get different jobs to be able to deal with that because a lot of the manual labor jobs are going to be going away.
So the solution is training people for jobs that will persist over the next few decades.
I actually will say something even more radical, but I'm Canadian, so I can say this, is I think that in the end, we're going to have to really look at something like universal income and taxing the machines that are going to be taking jobs away so that the companies are going to be able to support that. And in Ontario, we are actually taking a look at
universal basic income
for everyone just to have a quality of life where you're going to be all right.
Well, it's an important conversation to have, and you can't really have that conversation in full if you don't consider those ideas, whether you choose them or not, right? And to back up your point, if you just look at the change in manufacturing, and this is part of what Trump ran on, was bringing back manufacturing jobs that went overseas, right? Well, a lot of those jobs that went overseas that I think are never coming back, those jobs are done in a combination of people and robots today, right? Yeah. So even if those jobs came back, they wouldn't have that one-for-one match on what was lost.
Yeah.
But they'd be American robots.
But they'd be American robots. But when you're running on that idea of replacing this thing that is arguably irreplaceable, then you're already not fully understanding the picture, or maybe not disingenuously, like, selling it short. And so this does kind of fall in line with the rhetoric that we've seen, which is unfortunate because it deserves a real genuine dialogue, especially from our leaders at the top. But to have that conversation, you need the context to understand the impact technology's right. already had. And that's what I mean when I say automation is in some respects already here.
Yeah.
In many respects, it is.
I think that it's a scary conversation to have, though. I think that that it causes is. A lot of worry and anxiety to people who have thought of what are we going to do going forward? What are the jobs yes. that are going to be more easily automated versus jobs that will not be easily automated? Yeah. And there's a lot of different changes that are happening with, you know, AI and robotics and machine learning. So it's a really big deal.
Emily yeah. Dreyfus writing in Wired interviews Andrew McAfee, who is the co-founder of MIT's Initiative on the Digital Economy. He did a poll of 140 experts in AI on automation and employment at an event that they held. He said he asked the question, when will the robots take all the jobs and how worried are you? And the conclusion was this is happening soon. Mm. You see the graphs here, 50% of highway miles. When will 50% of highway miles be driven by self-driving vehicles? The consensus was 2030. The mean 2032, the soonest to be 7 years, median was 2030, and only 5 of the 140 said later than 2050 or never.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fairly strong consensus it's going to happen the next few decades.
I'd like to meet the people who said never.
Well, I think that there never. Is. There
they haven't
is
a, seen Quebec drivers.
but there is, I think, a large and credible group of people who say it's not going to be as bad as you think. It's like John Markoff, who I think is very astute, former New York Times technology writer. He says there's a lot of experts who say, A, it's not going to come as fast as you think because mm-hmm. there are a lot of hurdles.
Mm.
And B, many jobs will be created. They're just going to be a different kind of job. But I think the real thing to worry about, and this is why people are looking at basic income, is that it's the lowest paying jobs, the cashiers, mm-hmm. the grocery store clerks, mm-hmm. the drivers, machinists. Those are the people who are going to lose their jobs soonest, people working in the industrial. And so those are the people who I think it would be kind of responsible for the government mm-hmm. to acknowledge that we ought to be spending money on retraining and education, I would think.
You would think, but I mean, maybe it's too almost expensive. Like politicians don't care about poor people that much or something. So
they,
weird,
you know,
right?
They, unfortunately, they seem to be more short-sighted than ever before. They care about the next election, the next vote.
Yep. Yeah.
And they're really not looking that long-term.
It's a shame. This is a big opportunity. I mean, we can create the future. Yeah. Like, we have the chance.
We have to.
You know, it's going to happen. Why not?
Is it on Silicon Valley's shoulders to be responsible? I mean, one of the complaints people have is that Silicon Valley is inventing this stuff without taking responsibility for the consequences of it.
Mm-hmm.
Should technologists be more responsible and be planning for this?
I think that it's a really hard question because everyone wants to make a certain amount of profit, and I think that our entire society is based upon this amount that having more is better. And so, you know, you ask Google, well, should Google make less of a profit by not, you know, going
That's
into robotics?
Communism.
And would that be wrong? I think that it really is up to a government to take care of its people. And the problem is with lobbyists and the way that you have to be funded in order to, you know, have a campaign and being so expensive, then you become in the pockets of the people that can put that money there. And so I think that the entire system kind of forces everyone's hand that the only way to get up there to make the change, you already have to be beholden to the people that are not the ones that most need this to be protected from.
Yeah. It's also the impossibility of foretelling. You know, it's like, who could have foreseen the consequences of the iPhone.
A lot of science fiction writers.
Well,
you see,
but that's science fiction.
We
got a science fiction
pretty lousy record. My goodness.
No, I think.
Where's my flying car?
It's not,
where's my jetpack?
It's not too risky for somebody to say, well, that's speculation. we don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I don't think it's too risky, although it's interesting that the pushback to Steve Mnuchin, because so many people out of Silicon Valley and technology said, oh, you're crazy. This is happening fast, faster than you think.
Well, I mean, just because you can't necessarily predict the future doesn't mean you can't try to shape it, right?
I mean, and protect people before it comes to the place where then you have to. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. And this is not really a philosophy that is very au courant in Washington these days, but I'm of the opinion that companies are designed to maximize profits. That's how it's supposed to work. And that it's appropriate for us as a society to say, but maybe our goals don't coincide. It's really what you said, Georgia, with Google's goals. Google's going to maximize profits, but maybe we as a society think that there is better ways to do that. And I think we should have the right to do that. But right now in Washington, the philosophy is let the free market rule. It will handle everything, and competition is the key, and we shouldn't mess with the gears. And I frankly also understand that point of view. I'm not sure that that's the wrong point of view, but that's kind of where we stand right now. And so I think that's what you're going to see, at least for the next 4 years. YouTube is facing some problems with advertising. We'll talk about that problem and the laptop ban and why these airlines, all from the Middle East, are not allowed or are saying passengers cannot carry laptops, Kindles, or iPads. There is a theory. The Guardian says it goes down to a plot to put explosives in iPads. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But right now, your book's on Audible. Year Zero?
It is, and it's read by the inimitable John Hodgman, who is a brilliant comedian. He reads it magnificently. Hysterically funny. It's a wonderful way to consume that book.
Well, Audible is, as you know, our sponsor, and we're going to get you two Audible books right now. It's their new Gold Plus One plan. So you can try out two free audiobooks and then get one book credit per month as an Audible subscription. Of course, you can cancel anytime in the first 30 days and pay nothing. But I think we've got your first book. It's going to be Year Zero, right?
I would love for that to be the case.
Yeah, John Hodgman.
John Hodgman is brilliant.
You don't get better than that.
You don't.
Yeah, and he's got that nice dry wit that's perfect for your prose,
perfect for
I think.
That book, yeah.
Yeah. So there's one. What else do we like on audiobooks these days?
I'm listening to Patrick Rothfuss's first
book. Love the
Name of the Wind, I think.
Name of the Wind, yeah.
I'm finally catching up.
Trey Ratcliffe said, if you don't like this book, I don't want to be your friend anymore.
I think that's the second in the
series. That's the second. It's the King Killer Chronicles. You're reading the first one, The Name of the Wind, which is awesome.
So good.
Apparently, Patrick has given up, though. I don't know if we're ever going to see another one. He's supposed to be working on it, but the work is going very slowly.
A very nerdy book that I really like, it's on Audible, is The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde by Juno Diaz.
Wonderful.
And, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
You're kidding.
Is
The reader?
Yeah.
What?
He must have read it years ago, because that came out in like 2007, 2008. Or did he just re-record it?
They just re-recorded it. Yeah, because originally...
One of my favorite novels, yeah.
Yes, thank you. It's so good.
Is it called?
It's called The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde. If you just search for the author's name, Junot Diaz, J-U-N-O-T Diaz.
And it won the Pulitzer Prize, and deservedly so.
Yeah, that's
it's a really...
Oh, I thought you said Oscar Wilde. It's Oscar Wow.
Yeah. Wow, yeah, yeah.
read by... Oh, well, wait a minute. I got to listen to a little Lin-Manuel Miranda narrating this.
That is cool.
That is fantastic.
I kind of need to do it again.
I read it
If you like this book.
Yeah. Adore this book.
Yeah.
You've read it.
Oh, yeah. I read it when the year came out in print. I never listened to it, but I mean, this is a great reason to go back to it. It's probably almost 10 years ago, maybe 7-8 years old, and it won the Pulitzer the year it came out.
I think it might be about
7-8, I'm going to guess. Yeah, I'm going to ballpark. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, we've got three books. You only get two, but I'm going to give you one.
You get 13 with the Gold Plus or 14 because you get
well,
one a month.
Well, if you continue, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the Gold Plus One plan. Two free audiobooks to try out the service. After 30 days, $15 a month, $14.95. And you get a credit every month. And that's the most affordable way to get it. This is a weird book, but it is one of the most exciting audiobooks I've ever heard.
I've been wanting to read this.
166 narrators, including Nick Offerman, Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec, David Sedaris. They're the kind of lead readers. But so many people are in this. Lena Dunham is in it. In fact, you listen and you'll go, I know what? Who's that? I know that. It's amazing how many people are in this. Bradley Whitford, Bill Hader.
Jeff Tweedy. Rainn
Wilson. Jeff Tweedy.
Yeah. I love it.
Of Wilco.
Yes.
He does a Captain William Prince. It's awesome. Don Cheadle is in this.
Susan Sarandon.
And it's Susan Sarandon. And you as soon as she starts reading, you recognize her voice immediately. So it's really fun. The plot is bizarre. I would guess it's kind of more like sci-fi fantasy than anything else. And I don't want to give away too much. It all happens on one night in a cemetery in Washington, D.C., the night that Lincoln's son, Willie, is buried. And that's all I'm going to tell you because it's really fun just to start listening to this and figure out what's going on. And once you do, it's like jaw-dropping. It is a beautiful book and very deep, but at the same time, funny and interesting. It's unusual.
Yeah, I've really been wanting to read that. I love George Saunders, and
so this is his first novel. He's written a bunch of short stories. You like his
short stories? Yeah, yeah. He's. I mean, if you like fiction and you like things that are a little surreal, and kind of funny, but a little bit of social commentary, but not hitting you over the head with stuff, a little absurd. He's fantastic.
And this is where audiobooks sing because you can read the book, and you can imagine the voices, but when all of these great actors and readers and rock stars perform it, it comes alive.
Yeah, pulling together that cast is
incredible.
That's amazing.
I don't know how they did it.
Well, maybe we should say now that you are going to be reading a small segment of my next audiobook.
I have agreed to read the
little section.
Tiny portion.
Yeah.
Wow. Absolutely.
We're not going to have as many voices as Lincoln.
Are you going to be one of the aliens?
No, this is the new book that takes place 9 seconds in the future.
Oh, 9 seconds in the future.
Yeah. This is the
so I'll be tomorrow's San Francisco Chronicle.
You will be. Nine seconds from now. SF Chronicle.
Anyway, here's your deal. Go to audible.com/twit2 and you can sign up. This is a free 30-day trial. You'll get 2 audiobooks, and then if you decide to stick around, a book a month after that. And as with all of their subscriptions, you get a Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times as a part of your subscription. This offer is good in the U.S. and Canada, but Audible's worldwide. And while we can't give you this great deal outside of the U.S. and Canada, you got to try it. Audible.com/twit2. Do you do audiobooks, Georgia?
I do. I love doing audiobooks because I'm just so busy, right? I don't have the time to be able to deal with that, but when we go take long car rides, we usually listen to an audiobook, and
I love
it. It's
fun with the kids, isn't it?
It's wonderful.
Do you have a book that your kids like?
We just did Dune, and
your kids are sophisticated.
That's awesome.
Well, they don't watch TV or watch video games, so this was really a big deal for them, and they were able to go through it, and it was just in little tiny pieces to that and it was
impressive.
A lot of fun.
That's cool.
They have a very good version of Dune. In fact, they have all the Dune novels on here.
I listened to Dune on audio.
It was really, really good. Audible.com/twit2. Well, we're all Audible listeners.
I listen to 5 or 6 books a month easily.
That's great.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I will say, I've got to have this book, and I'll buy a book just outright because I just want it. And I think Lincoln and the Bardo was one of those. Mm. Read it. Listen to it. It is amazing. Let me know what you think, Nate.
Oh, yeah, definitely will.
So I thought this was an anti-competitive measure. We talked about it a little bit because United, Delta, and American, the American airlines, have been long upset with Emirates, Etihad, and Qatar Airlines because they get massive government subsidies. But, you know, so does British Airways, so does Air France. I mean, there's a long-standing tradition of airlines being subsidized by the government of the country they belong to. We don't do it here in the U.S. There's no American subsidized airline. So they feel like it's an unfair competitive advantage. And last week, the U.S. and the U.K. banned big electronic devices, basically anything but a cell phone, from flights from 10 countries originating in the Middle East on these airlines only. And I thought, well, it's an anti-competitive measure because you can fly United, American, and Delta, and still keep your laptop and your Kindle and your iPad. But maybe not, because here is the story from the Observer. Laptop ban on planes came after plot to put explosives in an iPad. So maybe the Department of Homeland Security and the UK security forces were responding to that. It bans tablets, laptops, game consoles, Kindles, to inbound flights from Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Tunisia, and Turkey. In the case of England, they did this does apply to British Airways, EasyJet, Jet 2, Monarch, Thomas Cook, and Thomson, as well as the eight foreign carriers. The U.S. is banning flights from Jordan, Egypt, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Qatar, Kuwait, and the UAE. So, security sources say the bans were not the result of single incidents, specific incidents, but a combination of factors, including discovery of this plot. Remember you used to have to turn on electronics? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then they stopped doing that, right?
Yeah, they used to.
That would be one way to handle this. I don't think you could have a bomb in an iPad and have it be a working iPad.
Maybe in a laptop. I mean, I remember when they would do that, I was like, couldn't they just kind of come up with something where the screen lights up? And
You want to give the government the benefit of the doubt in saying that this is about safety. But when you see, at least on the U.S.'s part, that it only applies to airlines that aren't owned by U.S. companies, that seems discriminatory, to be quite honest. And the fact that it is only Muslim-majority nations. And the U.S. and the U.K. seem to have coordinated, but they didn't choose the same countries,
yeah,
which is also very interesting. So there's a lot of just like, what here? And if that's your genuine concern, you can still take all these devices on a flight. You just have to pack them in your luggage, and then you have to check the luggage. So what's in question here is you can't actually use these devices in the cabin during a flight.
Right.
But you can use them if they come from the airline. So this doesn't apply to the flight crew. This doesn't apply to the cabin crew.
Well, that's reasonable because presumably the stuff provided by the airline is secure.
Well, yeah, but there's also lots of different electronics you could put explosives in. So it's like,
there's lots of things.
What is exactly happening here? How much safer are we really that this is happening than people would just fly Delta? Like, you know, then you're like, okay, I'm not going to fly Delta now. Now I don't know where am I really going to be that safe? It seems like there's probably a lot more to this than...
Well, yeah, bombs are bombs, whether they're in checked luggage.
Well, but it's much worse if it's much worse if it's in the cabin. It could blow a hole in the cabin. Passengers can get sucked out.
But it's
you
still
can't
playing the air that's
say where
up.
The bomb is going to be in checked luggage. Yeah. It could be near the skin of the plane, but it could also be in the middle, so it may not be as effective.
Man, if I had...
There are a lot of questions about this, but since I had suggested that this was actually a kind of a crypto, anti-competitive move, I have to point out there is a security issue, and that may be what stimulates.
It seems there's one. It would just be nice to feel like it was more well thought out as to what the security issue was and what the solution is.
Well, there's a lot of theater, right? Bruce Schneier has always called the TSA, and this is not the TSA, this is DHS, but it's often called TSA security theater because... Well, you take off your shoes because the guy tried to light his shoes on fire, but I don't know. And the thing that gets me is if I ever fly business class, almost always when I fly business class, I'm sent to the TSA pre. You know, they have you don't have to be a member of TSA pre to get selected for it. Yeah. And that's the one where you don't have to take off your shoes and you don't have to take out your laptop and you just walk through a metal detector. There's much lighter security. And it always strikes me. But the hijackers in 9/11 all were flying first class because they want to be the front of the cabin. Flying first class doesn't make you a better person.
No, it just means you paid for that. That's the
so
only
it
difference.
Makes me wonder, well, what's the whole thing about TSA pre if they're going to let you through because you bought an expensive ticket?
Yeah,
I don't. It's theater. It's security.
If I
theater.
Had to fly from Dubai to San Francisco
looking at
my fingernails
without a,
about air rage. That's a dangerous proposition.
I don't like that idea.
Have an entire plane full of people climbing the walls. And I think a lot of folks would be perfectly happy watching the movies and so forth. I need to read and do work on a plane. Like, I would be so bummed.
Well, and that's why
I thought it was a 16-hour flight, sir.
That's why I thought it was really about some sort of trade, because the most valuable customers are the business travelers in first and business class who are working on the plane. If you take away their laptops, they're gonna go from Etihad to Delta or American or United, where they can carry their laptop.
That's a good point.
It felt to me like a trade, a little bit of a mini trade war, crypto trade war. Amazon is now, it's official, going to collect sales taxes on all 50 states starting April 1st. The last holdouts, Hawaii, Idaho, Maine, and New Mexico. Remember what a big deal this was, that Amazon had this advantage over brick and mortar stores because they didn't have to charge sales tax, and the brick and mortar stores were upset. The states were upset because they were losing revenue. Amazon said, we're not doing business in California. We are our fulfillment centers in Nevada. It's over the border. And then remember they for a while they said, all right, well, fine, we're not going to give associate fees to anybody in California.
Right.
And that pissed off everybody. And finally they negotiated with the state of California, and they've negotiated with all the states. And so all of these states now will be charging.
The flip side conspiracy theory has been, and I've heard it articulated a lot, and there might be some truth, is when they realized that they really couldn't win fighting the states,
I think
they kind
the
of
case.
Led the charge into saying, fine, we're going to pay sales tax everywhere, because they are a large and sophisticated enough company that they can actually employ.
They can do it.
They can figure out how to pay different differential taxes
in
4,800. And I think that's something crazy like that.
There's jurisdictions, a lot of tax jurisdictions
with the counties and the towns and everything else. So at the end of the day, when they realized they could not win against the state of California, some argue that they led the charge in saying, okay, fine, let's just do this, because that would just really cripple folks that don't have.
Yeah, Amazon's already made it.
Yeah.
Amazon no longer needs that competitive advantage.
And they can do this in 4,800 jurisdictions. Of just like,
and
fine, we'll throw 100 engineers at it.
Well, that's what they always said. It would be impossible to figure that out. Come on, Amazon. You got
until they realize that maybe Jet
could. I could write a program to do that in BASIC.
Yeah. They can make drones deliver to your house.
Yeah.
They could probably figure out everywhere sells.
Actually, the National Conference of State Legislatures estimated that in 2012, $23 billion in tax revenue was lost because of these online purchases. So it's a big deal for states.
It's a big deal, but you know, Amazon used to argue that it would negatively hurt their business too, and it hasn't done that at all.
Yeah.
Like, they've been fine. So,
and incidentally, in theory, you still owed sales tax. You just Amazon didn't have to collect it, but you still had to pay it. So every year for the last 10 years, state of California has asked on my tax return,
there's a box.
What did you buy online? And here, give us your tax. You owe us.
Like,
and I always said, I never bought anything online, sir. Right?
Online?
Online? What's that?
Crazy.
I go down to the store. Model 3 almost here. You're a Tesla driver, no?
No.
All right. No, nobody cares.
I do.
I care, because this Tesla will be about $35,000, and
did you put a reservation in, Nate?
No.
Oh, you should.
But I kind of feel like I
Nate doesn't even own a car.
But Nate's going to be buying a car soon, hopefully.
Oh, there we
Nate's
go.
Got some driving to
Tesla.
Do to come
I
here
love
three times a week.
You know, got some driving to do.
Just today, I was saying, or maybe it was yesterday, I was saying how much, once you drive an electric car, you never want to go back to an internal combustion engine.
Only there was someone I knew who had a Tesla who could let me drive it.
I'll let you drive my Tesla.
Here you go. Here's the key.
Take it around the block.
Take it around the block, kid.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing about driving an electric car?
Well, besides the kind of the feeling that, specious or not, that you're being good to the environment, we have panels, so we're generating our power. So I think it's pretty good. I'm not getting my power from a coal-fired plant.
Yeah.
But besides that, it's funner to drive. Is that a
Well, it's all torque,
it's
right?
It's instant acceleration. You just do this. And also, most of them have regenerative braking. So when you don't put the brake on, when you want to stop at a stop sign, you just let off the accelerator. It slows down. You brake it at the very end. Once you get used to that, you never want to drive a normal.
Yeah.
When I drive my wife's ICE car, internal combustion engine, it's noticeable, the hesitation. That's what they call it.
Well, it's kind of interesting that you mentioned all this, because I am looking for a car right now. I'm trying to figure out, you know, what to buy.
But you have a long commute. That might be a problem.
It's about an hour, you know.
It's
from
50,
San
well in 50, range. 50 miles, something
well
like
in
that.
Range.
Well,
yeah.
The thing is,
it's
I have a garage
you need
a
100 mile
to charge it in in San Francisco. So I'll be doing street parking.
Oh, that,
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 for
rules,
a to rent,
that rules it out.
But, right,
yeah.
That does.
That rules
that
it out.
Kind of. And you'd have to wait for a really long time.
Yeah,
like the waiting.
You
list
know,
is like a
we
year
could
two?
Facilitate that. Let's get Lisa. Let's get a charger out front, right? Because then you
so
drive
at least
here
you
and
make
charge
it. Here.
It.
Ooh.
And then you're definitely coming.
No,
to work,
because we
young
make
man.
Money on it. It's a buck an hour. We make money.
Well, whenever the Tesla Model 3 does come, hopefully it'll be affordable and attainable, and there will be plentiful charging stations. Whether or not it can afford the car
right,
at that time.
Right, you just need one of those wall units on the ground to plug it in.
Or you could put some of these new fancy Tesla roof tiles on the car.
By the way, those are coming.
They are.
But, you know, like...
They're going to start taking orders next month.
A few of the things I've been looking at. One is this little Toyota called the GT86. It's a fairly inexpensive, like, naturally aspirated, you know, stick, kind of noisy, stiff suspension.
Wait a minute. What's naturally aspirated? It breathes
no
air?
No turbo, no supercharger. Oh. Yeah. So, sorry. Actually, that's nerdy.
Oh, it's an NA vehicle. I understand.
Well, it's a nice vehicle. So, it's like a kind of old school. It's a little rough. You're driving stick, and I really enjoy driving stick. I kind of like some of those older ideas that are going to get thrown away.
Go with a mini with a stick shift. I had that in San Francisco. It'd be great
for street parking, right?
It was so much fun. That thing had so much power going up the hills.
But I am excited to see the Model 3 actually driving, even if it's just a silly little GIF that Elon Musk shared on Twitter.
He says he won't drive one.
Which, how does that make sense?
Well, he's got a Model S.
He has, yeah.
But this is a near consumer-ready version of your arguably most important car you've ever released, the one that will be affordable to many, many people. And you don't want to drive it? What does that tell me as a potential buyer?
There's a better Tesla car out there is really what he's saying.
God, you know, it's like, come on, Elon.
Probably drives a Mercedes, you know. The Model 3, he doesn't like the name. He says he didn't realize it would cause confusion. They wanted to name it the Model E.
But Ford, yeah.
Right? Mm. So they have an S, they have an X, they have an E or a 3, and the 3 has... looks like an E.
And like text message emojis.
And what's the next one going to be? The Y. The Model Y is coming, so this is sexy. S, E, X, and Y.
I wonder if Elon was 13 years old and was like, someday I'm going to have a car company.
He's chuckling to himself. I actually did it.
Right? I guarantee you.
He's going to collect on a bet for somebody like in fourth grade.
Right.
I did it.
Give me the $5 now.
Oh, man.
Georgia Dow, thank you for coming. I hate to end this show because I don't want you to go back, but I really appreciate your being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks to your husband, Anthony, who's had to put up now with 2 Twitch shows. Poor guy.
He even got a little bit of airtime.
You don't let your kids play video games?
They have to earn their time. They play.
Maybe you don't know this, but George and Anthony have a virtual reality room.
What?
And they play. In fact, they have 2. She'll be downstairs and he'll be upstairs playing against each other in virtual reality. But the kids don't get to use it.
That is torture.
That's mean.
They earn points. We have a system where if they get
like you
good
own the
grades,
holodeck, but not for you, kid.
That's true. Yeah. Get your own VR. No.
Someday you'll have a job and you can afford it yourself.
They mow some lawns. And then they get to play just like life.
They do. Right? That's real life.
So I work hard. And
how
then
old
I
are they?
Got 8 and 11.
Okay. So they're not yet.
Teens. Really. Yeah.
Wait till they get to 13 and see how that works.
Wow.
Right. We'll see. We'll see.
When I was a kid, we broke into mom's liquor cabinet. When they're teenagers, they're going to be breaking into mom and dad's VR room.
They're
going
to have to drag it off of us first, though. So.
What game are you playing these days?
The last game that we're playing is Quest. We're playing right now, and Robo Recall.
Robo Recall is so good.
It's such a good game. Good. Have you? And Anthony's playing a really scary one called Chair in the Room. If you do the game show, you have to play that and then video it. I have video of Anthony.
Chair in the Room?
Really scary.
That sounds scary.
It is terrifying. Yeah,
something
I started
eerie
it.
About that title.
Terrifying. Like, absolutely the scariest thing.
Nice. When you play, like you're downstairs, he's upstairs, do you see each other in the place that
we
you're playing?
We used to play in the same room and we had pillows
You'd
on
run
the
into
floor.
Each other.
And then, but every once in a while, one of us would clonk the other one. He says that was by mistake, but I'm not really sure. So we've now separated each other, so we each get a little bit more of play time.
It's both ridiculously adorable that you play together.
Isn't that sweet?
And it's also just like, and she leaves the kids out.
I know.
I think they're good parents.
Kid.
I think that's
I'm
actually
just
a great idea.
It's great.
Georgia's videos are at anxiety-videos.com. She's got a parenting video. You can find out her method to her madness.
Yeah.
And, of course, we catch her on iMore.com and as a regular on Twit and MacBreak Weekly. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. All right, both of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob Reed, for being here. Don't forget, Year Zero is available from Amazon and other places for $1.99.
Just for the digital copies. But yeah, all digital platforms, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.
That's going to end in
How
like
long?
A week or something?
It's going to be for about a week. You know, maybe 7-8 days. Definitely today. I mean, it's an honor
rabbit
of this
early
appearance.
Just in case.
It's an honor of
you
this
You absolutely yeah. got to read it. It's hysterical, and at $1.99, there's really no excuse not to read the Kindle edition or the Barnes & Noble edition of Year Zero, a novel by Rob Reed. And we'll look forward to having you back this summer when the new
yes,
novel
comes out. Yes, I will tell you lots
out.
About that.
I appreciate it. And give our love to Morgan,
I will
of course.
Do.
You married well, my friend.
I did.
And, of course, Nathan Olivares-Giles. So wonderful to have you. He's all over the network.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we'll be back next week on the new Screensavers.
You got it.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Nate OG on the Twitter. We do This Week in Tech every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC. We love our live audiences. If you want to be here, if you're going to be in the Petaluma area, just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure there's a seat ready for you. You can also watch on the live stream either at twit.tv/live or YouTube Live or Twitch or Ustream Live. There's even live audio. You can listen while you work. And if you can't, on-demand audio and video available at twit.tv/thisweekintech and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can.
This is
bye-bye.
Amazing.
Yay.